Now, for us to proceed to the adoption of the minutes, now I want to put it to the members if they would agree that we refer the minutes to the next meeting. Agreed. Agreed, okay. And then the next item is the submission by Dr. Fick. Now again, in the absence of the quorum, I do want us to discuss on how do we want to go about it. I can, maybe as the chair, my proposal would be, and then we discuss it, that we receive the submission. And then we then defer decision making on the submission when other members are here, so that at least there we meet the requirement as prescribed. Okay, that's my proposal. Now, honorable members, I'm opening for a discussion on the proposal or a counter proposal. Dr. Peek?
No, thank you, honorable chairperson. I would like to support your proposal on the first one with regards to the minute, as well as on with regards to the submission, and deferring the decision making for later, as long as that later is later today. We have to make a decision on this matter today in due to the time constraints of the Money Bills Amendment Procedures and Related Matters Act.
Okay, a decision later when everybody's here.
That's correct.
To me, it's still, it's a good proposal. Are we in agreement? Member Manana? Are we in agreement? Yes, there's consensus. Okay, shall we then proceed in the manner in which we have proposed now? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, let's then zoom straight to the budget proposals. From Dr. Fick. I know that when a request was made, there was a deliberation on the request. Then we then, the meeting agreed, or there was a consensus in saying that if that this will be taken, as long as it is a member tabling it to the committee, because it had a potential of creating a complication in that the other members also wanted to be allowed to table. So it was not going to help us to move forward. So we then agreed that it would be a member of the committee tabling. It's okay, we know where this member comes from, but the member of the committee will be tabling the proposal. I just want to check if we're still moving the same lines, or have we changed?
Honorable Chair, thank you. No, we will not renegade on a decision that we've accepted. So the decision stands, the agreement still stands, that it will be tabled by the members of the committee.
Okay.
Can I just then also indicate that the Honourable Mainir will do the introduction?
Okay, no problem.
I will do the proposals, and then Honourable McLaughlin will do the second part of the presentation as okay. Members of the committee. Thank you.
All right. I take it that we, yes, Honourable Member Manana.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. In our last discussion with regards to this matter, we agreed that it need not to be a political organization that is submitting this. But the document that is in front of me, it's indicating that this document is from the DA, So it is against our decision. I don't know how can we address this one.
Okay. Maybe if I'm, or do you want to come in before I rule, I make a ruling?
Chairperson, I mean, these are clearly the DA's proposals, which the DA are entitled to make, and indeed, given the powers that Parliament has under the Money Bills Amendment Act, should be making. Now, the point of the matter is these are the DA's proposals, and they are going to be proposed by a member of the committee, and that member is Dr. Malcolm Fick. So it's in fact not a violation of the rule. It's not as if, as we would interpret your rule, surely, that a person other than a member of the committee would be tabling proposals on behalf of a political party. A member of the committee is tabling the proposals, and his name is Malcolm Fick. So I don't think that there should be any difficulty.
You see, I don't have a problem with you changing the cover. We know that it's a member of CTA presenting. But if it comes like this, it will take us back to where EFF wanted also to be allowed to come and present. And then the ANC would then want to come and present. And then it then defeats the purpose of a committee, a parliamentary committee that is going to consider the appropriations bill. And indeed, in the in our consideration of the appropriations bill, we do accept, I'll say, submissions. But what we do not agree with is that we then take a submission that is written as coming from DA. It's a member of, and we will all know that it came from the DA, but to take this submission like this one is going to take us back, and it will make our work a bit difficult. I don't think that's the intention. The intention is to share with us your thoughts. Even if, and as it is tabled by a member of the DA, I take it that, it is a given. But if you submit it like this, then it takes us back, because the other members might contest and say, no, you said, then we did not do it because you said. Now, the other issue with leadership, you must be consistent. You can't today take a decision, tomorrow you change it, and then you know. So I will then appeal that maybe you just change the cover and say submission by honorable member, a member of the DA. Yeah? But if it comes like this, it's like it comes from DA, and we have allowed DA to... Okay, you may come in, honorable Meneer.
Chair, I think, I would advise a little bit of caution here. Despite the decision of the committee, what the committee needs to determine is what's permitted under the law, under the Constitution and under the law. And so the question would be, does the Moneyballs Procedure Act prevent members of Parliament presenting proposals in respect of the budget on behalf of themselves or a party that they are elected to represent? That's really the question that you have to ask. And I would say that in fact the intention of the Act was to allow members to make proposals on behalf of the parties that they represent in Parliament. So if the Moneyballs Act was, or if Parliament was functioning as it should, this committee should in fact welcome proposals from any member representing parties in the National Assembly. So I think I would just advise some caution here, and perhaps it would be wise to pause just to determine exactly what the Act allows and doesn't.
Well, as I've put it earlier on to say, you see, this process allows for submissions. Okay? But then we are a committee that has got to receive those submissions. Now, you have correctly said members must be allowed to make. But I then said to you, we discussed this matter. I think you were not there. And then we arrived at a consensus that if you say DA is making a submission, maybe they must go and do research submissions in public hearings, you know? And then here a member of the committee submits. And then if it's Ms. Dr. Fick, it's a given. Now, what I don't want is to reverse this process and then complicate it, because also we have a time constraint to an extent that the other committees, the other members will then say, no, then you must wait, we also want to come and make a submission. ANC would say, I want to come and make a submission. Remember, I come from the ANC, but I can't allow the ANC to say now, as ANC making a submission, but as an individual member of this committee, which would then be a given, where we will know where he comes from. And automatically you know that it's a DA input. But to say the DA in this committee, the DA has come to make a submission in this committee, to me, I don't know, it doesn't sound correct. Maybe, do you think I need to consult maybe the Rules Committee?
I mean, Chair, obviously the clock is ticking, and I mean, I would be happy for us, or we would be happy to amend the title page. But
yeah.
I would caution you, I would advise you, when you go into this process in the medium-term budget policy statement and in the next main budget, that before you make a decision of this nature, that you possibly take legal advice, because my own interpretation, which is one interpretation, I'm not a lawyer, is that the intention of the Act was in fact to ensure that political, or that representatives on the behalf of their political parties make proposals to this committee. But that's for another time.
Okay, you're right. I think for now, let's just change the page. Ne? It's a submission from Dr. Fick. And then after this, I think we will have to consult.
That's fine.
And then, so that we can at least be advised, properly advised on future engagements. Okay. Thank you for your understanding.
And Chair, I mean, I think that's the right way to go, because remarkably, I mean, this Act has obviously been in place since 2009, but the powers that it provides haven't really been explored. So in many ways, we are in slightly uncharted territory and feeling our way. So I think it probably is a good compromise. We'll send you an amended title page, and perhaps when you go back into the budget cycle in October and next year in February, I would maybe advise we take legal advice before we make a decision. I think it's a good compromise.
Yeah, no, thank you. We agree with that. We said let's go and work on this one, because for now we don't have time. Let's just go and broadly consult and then be properly advised. Thank you very much. Shall we then hand over to Dr. Fick, because he's the one who requested, and then you can then formally request your colleagues to assist you.
Okay, that's right, Chair. Thank you very much for the agreement we've come to. And as I said, indicated earlier, Honourable Maynard will do the introduction, I'll do the proposals, and Honourable McLaughlin will do the savings. So thank you for allowing us this 1.5 hours, and we'll try and be a little bit economical with the time.
You know that there's another, there's a department coming. Okay, proceed.
Thank you for the opportunity, Chair. We'll try and get done as quickly as possible. Chair, if I could take you back, we all know that on the 22nd of February 2017, the former Minister of Finance tabled the budget in Parliament. And since then, we know that the fiscal framework was passed on the 8th of March and the Division of Revenue Bill on the 15th of March. And what remains, obviously, is the Appropriations Bill, which is before this committee. I've referred to the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act, which gives Parliament powers to amend the budget, and in this case, the Appropriations Bill. And so what we'd like to do today through our colleagues on the Appropriations Committee is to make proposals for what amounts to, and don't be daunted by this, 405 amendments in the amount of 10.8 billion rand to fund six proposals. And those six proposals focus on creating jobs, fighting drug-related crime, supporting poor students, which I know is a particular passion of yours, combating corruption, providing relief to the poor, and fighting cross-border crime. What we feel is very important to put to the committee and for everybody to understand is that the amendments that we propose are budget neutral and are funded by reprioritizing expenditure within the existing budget and will therefore have no effect on the fiscal deficit, which as you know is estimated to be about 149 billion rand or 3.1% of GDP in 2017. And in any event, the fiscal framework has already been agreed to by Parliament. So that is in essence, Chair, 405 amendments in the amount of 10.8 billion rand to fund six proposals which my colleague Malcolm Figg will outline. Thank you.
Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. With that good news, we could either stop now and accept the proposal, or if you need me, I could go and have it in more detail.
I did talk about consistency. We have agreed on the procedure.
Thank you,
so
Chair. Now, I was just thinking.
We listen to your briefing. Hello, listen.
I just thought in terms of
there's
time.
There's a lot involved. It's not as easy as you know, you're putting it. So let's listen. And then when the others are here, we will then also, within the parameters of the rules, then take a decision.
Okay, Chair, on a serious note. Allow me to deal with the proposals, and thank you for the opportunity once again. As has been indicated by Honourable Mayne, the first area that we cover is regarding the creation of jobs, and we know that in this country, which has been going on for too long, our unemployment rate is increasing at a rate that it's going to become unsustainable. It is already putting substantial pressure on our social grants, etc. So, with 8.9 million people who do not have jobs or who have given up looking for jobs, living without dignity, independence, and no decision-making on their own, we have identified that there is an area that could be covered in the short term. The area we're referring to here is your Extended Public Works Program, which we believe can make a difference to the lives of people who do not have jobs and who have given up looking for jobs. There is a program, that same program is working very well, and it's successful in the city of Cape Town, and we could probably use that as a model. And in that regard, we would like to make the first proposal, which is in an amendment, to increase the appropriation of vote number 11, which is public works, by 1.5 billion rand. That will enable the provision of jobs of 213,602 more work opportunities in 2017-2018. So it's an immediate solution to a problem that has been going on for too long. The next area which we would like to make a proposal in is the fighting of crime, and nobody needs to be reminded of the crime that is ongoing, and specifically but not restricted to what has been going on recently is crime on the vulnerable children, vulnerable women, which needs to be curtailed as soon as possible. It's actually getting out of hand. In that regard, we are aware that the South African Police Service is responsible for preventing, combating and investigating crime in South Africa. However, due to constraints, the police seem to be losing the fight against specifically drug-related crime, which is rampant, with 314,502 cases of unlawful possession of and dealing in drugs reported in 2016-17 alone. That's excluding the outstanding cases and the cases that have... I'm sorry, it's this smartphone.
Are you taping?
No, I'm not.
That's okay.
Apologies, Honourable Chair. Furthermore, the Hawks are responsible for investigation of a wide range of organized crime activity, including organized crime syndicates, serious and violent crime, commercial crime, and corruption. With drug-related crime, skyrocketing a unit called the South African Narcotics Enforcement Bureau was established within the Hawks. However, this unit is grossly under-resourced and comprises of only 106 police officers serving the whole country. We therefore propose an establishment of a stand-alone specialized unit dedicated to preventing, combating, and investigating drug-related crime within the South African Police Service. In that regard, we propose an amendment to the appropriations bill to increase the appropriation of vote number 23, which is police, by 688 million to provide for the establishment of a stand-alone specialized unit within the South African Police Service dedicated to the fight against drug-related crime in 2017-18. So again, it's a short-term solution that can be resolved. We are currently in the financial year 2017-18, so it could be available immediately as from next week and Thursday. The next area we want to deal with is supporting of students. This is a major concern. Again, nobody needs to be reminded of student protests that have been ongoing, and there is indication that it's not going to stop in the near future. So we are aware that there's been a persistent underfunding of higher education institutions, including your technical and vocational education training colleges. We also know that the Minister of Finance, all of them, have indicated that that's an area that needs attention and that's an area that needs growth. Of the 370,000 full-time students attending technical and vocational education training colleges, 298,457 receive financial assistance from the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. Moreover, the number of students attending technical and vocational education training colleges has been kept at 710,535 over the medium term due to funding shortfalls. Despite the shortage of skills in South Africa, we have to ensure the cap on student numbers is lifted to ensure that there is a more skilled labor force, and also to ensure that most more poor students who cannot afford the fees are able to study at technical and vocational education training colleges in South Africa, at your TVET colleges, as some of us may know it. We therefore propose an amendment to the appropriations bill to increase the appropriation of board number 15, higher education and training, by 3.5 billion rand to provide financial assistance to 63,331 more poor students who are enrolled or would like to enroll at technical and vocational education training colleges in 2017-2018. Corruption is another major problem in this country of ours. We agree, and if we listen to speeches in the votes, the budget votes, a lot of emphasis has been placed on corruption, and then we also agree with that. With regards to that, the public protector who is responsible for investigating improper conduct in all spheres of government in South Africa, however, there is a severe underfunding which has compromise the fight against corruption and maladministration by the public protector. We now have a new public protector who has the same problems. Advocate Busisiwe Makwabane tells us the budget is a drop in the ocean and she needs 1 billion rand just to stay afloat. Remarkably, the public protector, which was handling 17,374 cases, had 36 vacancies, including 20 vacancies for investigators in 2015-16. Despite the heavy caseload, only 174 million has been allocated for investigations by the public protector. We cannot allow this to continue. We therefore propose an amendment to the appropriations bill to increase the appropriation of vote number 21, which is justice and constitutional development, by 174 million rand to boost the investigative capacity of the public sector in 2017-18. Supporting the poor, we all know this is not a solution that's going to be resolved currently, but we can at least make a difference. We have approximately 17.3 million people who are currently receiving a wide variety of social grants in South Africa. The reality is, as much as it doesn't seem to us who are in jobs, is that social grants are a lifetime to millions of people who do not have jobs or have given up looking for jobs. As far as malnutrition is concerned, staggeringly, we have 46,294 children admitted to hospital suffering from malnutrition, and we have lost 4,903 children between the ages of 0 and 5 years old to malnutrition in the last 3 years between 2013 and 14 and 2016-17. This is avoidable, Honourable Chairperson. The second area that we'd like to cover with regards to assisting the poor is food inflation. Moreover, the average increase in social grants is 6.3%, which is more or less in line with inflation in 2017-18. However, food price inflation is expected to be at least 7.7% in 2017-18. The increase in social grants is therefore simply insufficient to deal with food price inflation, resulting in widespread malnutrition and hunger in South Africa. We cannot allow the most vulnerable people in society, especially our children, to suffer in South Africa. We therefore propose an amendment to the Appropriations Bill to increase the appropriation to Vote 17, Social Development, by 4.5 billion as follows. Increase the child grant by 2.8 billion rand to prevent malnutrition among children between the ages of 0 and 2 years. Increase all social grants by 1.7 billion rand to assist people battling high food prices in 2017-18. The last area, Honourable Chairperson, is border control. We are vulnerable to organised crime syndicates, illegal immigration and stock theft, because our 46,862 kilometre landward border is a wide open door. The South African National Defence Force aims to maintain 15 subunits, that is plus minus 2,025 soldiers, on our landward borders, which is well below the 22 subunits, which is 2,970 soldiers, required to protect our landward borders. We have simply not prioritized border safeguarding sufficient and will spend more on VIP protection services. The amount that we spend is 1.4 billion rand protecting ministers, then we will spend on border safeguarding of only 1 billion. Protecting our borders in 2017-18. We have to ensure that our landed borders are properly protected so that we are not vulnerable to organized crime syndicates, illegal immigrants and stock thieves. We therefore propose an amendment to the Appropriations Bill to increase the appropriation of Vote 19, Defense and Military Veterans, by 483 million to provide 7 more subunits, that is 945 soldiers, for border safeguarding in 2017-18. So, in summary, we will propose the amendments of 405 to the Appropriations Bill in the amount of 10.8 billion rand to fund the 6 proposals, which is your Department of Public Works 1.5 billion, Department of Higher Education and Training 3.483 billion, Department of Social Development 4.496 billion, Department of Police 688 million, Department of Defense 183 million, and Department of Justice and Constitutional Development 174 million. And the Chairperson, I'll now hand over to Honourable.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As Honourable Mania said earlier, these proposals are based on a budget neutral approach. So therefore, in order to do this, we'd have to take the money from somewhere else. And what we did was we looked at all the departments and we decided that 13 of them should be ring-fenced. In other words, their budgets are not to be touched. So we thought the ones that needed to be safeguarded from a purge, if you like, or a reduction in their budgets were the following departments. They are Department of Basic Education, Department of Higher Education and Training, Department of Health, Department of Social Development, Department of Correctional Services, Independent Police Investigative Division, Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, the Office of the Chief Justice and Judicial Administration, the Department of Police, Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, Department of Water and Sanitation, Department of Human Settlements, and the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. We also then firewalled 6 programs in the economic classification across departments, and those departments were then the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, where the National Disaster Management Community Work Program was isolated as being sacrosanct, the Department of Home Affairs, Citizens Affairs section there, Department of Public Works, the expanded Public Works Program is not to be touched, and the Department of Energy, Electrification would not be touched, and the Department of Mineral Resources, where Mine Health and Safety would not be touched. This would obviously then leave 27 departments which we could go and make budget cuts through, and those were looked at in varying ways. As you can see, we also proposed a hiring freeze and cutting spending on any new employees in those 27 national departments. This is in line with our principle of limiting and managing the national wage bill. And we also saved, or we proposed saving $4 billion by cutting the increase in current spending across 24 economic classification items in national departments, including, for example, advertising, catering, communication, consultants, fleet services, consumable supplies, consumables, travel and subsistence, venues and facilities and entertainment. There is a substantial list of them. They appear on that table in the proposal on page 6 at the top. I'd just like to highlight 4 of those that obviously take the most money. Salaries and wages, this would be by the hiring freeze, which could then be reduced by 1.2 billion rand. Consultants, business and advisory services, cut by 907 million. We all know that it's a very desirable thing for us to use less consultants, and we would therefore propose that that be reduced by that amount. Contractors, again, many of these contractors they load their prices, and it's often for items and services that we could do without, and I think under the current circumstances we have in the country we should do without. That could be cut by 529 million, or it's actually 530 million. And then lastly, the last one I want to name, travel and subsistence. It's always a bone of contention, but I'm sure that it wouldn't be too difficult for us to limit that by taking 450 million off that particular budget. This is across all departments. Discretionary savings, we've proposed a saving of 368 million by making discretionary cuts to the increase in spending in 2016-17 compared with 2017-18. In the Department of Public Works, the Prestige Program, the Department of Police, the VIP Security Program, and the National Treasury Secret Service Program. We also propose a saving of 5.8 billion by making discretionary spending cuts in the National Treasury in respect of the new development bank payment, and in the Department of Defense for the VIP Regional Jet, which is proposed, bringing the total discretionary savings to 6.2 billion. Now, you might argue that the 4.5 billion rands saved for the new development bank is unavoidable because it's a contractual obligation. But as you know, we are not in favor of the BRICS arrangement, and we would suggest that what we would have to do is renegotiate the contract in order to spread that load out further and free up this money, because in our current financial situation, that money could do far better for the country, be utilized to address our current needs, than to fund an offshore bank. Our total savings then have been identified in the amount of 10.8 billion within the budget for 2017. What this means is that the amendments we propose are budget neutral, as stated earlier, and can be funded from within the existing budget by making the proposed cuts. It will have no effect on the fiscal deficit, which is estimated, as you know, to be 149 billion or 3.1% of GDP in the 2017-18 financial year. I'll hand back to Dr. Fick to conclude. Thank you, ma'am.
Honourable Chairperson, sorry, once again, thank you for allowing us to table these proposals, and we can honestly say that The intention of our proposal is for the benefit of all who live in this country. Thank you once again, and we just hope that this proposal is considered favorably. Thank you.
Thanks for the presentation. I just want to check with honorable members if they have clarity-seeking questions. Yes, Dr.
Sorry, Chairperson. Just also to indicate that we will send through the amended document with as per the request at the beginning. We'll send it through. And then there is a detailed schedule that we can submit as well.
Okay. Any clarity-seeking question? Honorable Member Manana?
That was the question I was going to raise because it is included in the conclusion. When can we get it? Because the 104, the 405.
Just to clarify, the document has got three parts. It's got the first section. The second section includes an appendix one, so the table setting out the savings. The third is in fact a proposed amendments to the actual schedule attached to the appropriations bill. The amended document that we'll send through is the document with an amended title page, which will come through shortly.
All right, any other questions? Are you Honorable Member Manana, is that all? Now, my question to Dr. Fick. One of our mandates as this committee is to amend the budget. And this is a process. It's not a short process, a long process. Now, if you look at the Money Bills Act, it spells out the process that has got to unfold in the amendment. Now, with this background, for instance, you are in this committee, you already are familiar with the Act. What made you to make this submission this late? All right, I'm trying to check on your intentions for submitting for making the submission late, knowing the process that has got to unfold. But also, obviously the Act also does say what should happen before we amend. Now, with your experience, have you looked at the Act? I'm looking at your timing for your submission. The Act clearly states that whatever amendment that we embark upon, they must be consistent with the fiscal framework and the Division of Revenue Act. Those have already been passed, and you're coming after they have been passed. Now, are you able to maybe explain whether your proposals are consistent with the fiscal framework or not? But then remember, these are clarity-seeking questions. We will still take this in because we need the other members to be able to. And the fact that you made this submission today, and you want us to take a decision today, from where I'm sitting, it's going to be a very difficult thing to do. Because members must carefully apply their minds and check on all those things, the consistency with your fiscal framework and also the consistency with the Division of Revenue Bill. And you have proposed 405. Your amendments are 405. Yeah, 405. Yeah? 405 amendments, and you're submitting them today. And obviously, this process is the appropriation bill, or let me say the budget process is time bound. Now, if you, for instance, the 405, how do you see us moving forward? 405, when about how many departments? 27 departments are affected. And you know what that means, 27 departments affected. I'm saying, I know what you doing is in line with the act that says the money bill says can amend, but I'm looking at the feasibility of doing this within the time frames and but also the framework provided by the act. 27 departments affected, meaning there must be consultation with all the 27 departments, and after the consultation there must be public hearings. And after those public hearings, there must be a consultation with the National Treasury. And after consultation with the National Treasury, we must then table, okay, we must allow the National Treasury to go back and reflect on this, because from our meeting, they must, the National Treasury must go and reflect and come back and tell and give us a report on his thinking on the matters. Look, I'm trying to paint this picture so that you can look and see whether, look at the feasibility of these amendments that you are proposing now. And then the Act says we must then, in our report, we must table a report to the House. But in our report, we must also mention the whatever rationale that is given by the National Treasurer. So, well, I'm just commenting so that you can see how difficult your proposals are. But also, I'm not taking a decision. I'm just explaining and showing you how difficult this is and your timing, which comes at the tail end when other processes have already gone through. Passing of the Framework Act, fiscal framework, passing of the Division of Revenue Bill, and then 405 proposals to amend, you know. Yeah, I thought I should just reflect on your presentation and so that we all look at this and move from the same wavelength.
Chair, I know that you've got other business. Let me respond to your
three questions.
On the whole question of whether it's consistent with the fiscal framework. Yes, our budget proposal, the fiscal framework, as I said in my introduction, has already been adopted. The Division of Revenue Bill has already been adopted. And so our proposed amendments are only to the Appropriation Bill, and they have no bearing on the fiscal framework or the Division of Revenue Bill. So that's the first question. Second question on timing. We obviously applied for a slot. This is the slot that we were given. It does come towards the end of the deliberations on the Appropriations Bill, but in fact, our presentations are prior to you wrapping up your deliberations on the Appropriations Bill. I see today you're dealing with the Department of Human Settlements on the Appropriations Bill. So we are certainly, I think, I think the timing is tight, but we are still sort of within the framework. On the whole question of the interpretation of the Money Bills Act, yes, the Treasury would have to come back to us, but bear in mind that the Appropriations Bill only needs to be passed by the end of July. So, in fact, there's plenty of time. But you are right. It is difficult. But I think that it's time that Parliament start to explore and properly use its powers under the Moneyball Amendment Act to amend the budget, I think, in the interests of the country. And we have those powers. We've got six, I think, very compelling proposals which can easily be funded, and I think this committee should take a serious look at them. It is a difficult process. We do have time, and I think that we should use our powers and use the time available and amend the budget.
Okay, so you were responding to our clarity seeking questions. Do you want to add, Honourable Member McLaughlin?
If I may, Madam Chair, let's add to what Honourable Mania said. And as you're aware, Parliament is having a look at amending the Money Bills Act because of the difficulty with the time frames that are set up in there. And we had this in the past. I mean, last year we had Advocate Jenkins coming and giving us advice on this actual cycle and the time frames involved and so on. And I would just ask that we take it on board in that sense, that because of this very difficult procedure that is involved in amending a budget, as you rightly point out, what has to happen if the committee were to decide to propose amendments, we have to submit a report to Parliament first to propose the amendments. Then each minister needs to have a look. Each cabinet minister, each departmental minister has to have a look at how it affects him or her personally. They have 10 days within which to respond. It's an ongoing process, and that process cannot fit into the current time frame for passing the bill. With due respect, that seems to be the situation. So I would just ask that we just bear it in mind when looking at possibly amending the Money Bills Act, that we need to accommodate this, because the way it is at the moment, it's almost as if it's designed never to actually be able to be of effect, because it is so difficult to achieve that aim. So I'm just asking, can we just bear that in mind as well while we consider the proposals, that the actual mechanics of it, the tools we have in order to make amendments is actually very clumsy and almost impossible to achieve. Thank you, ma'am.
Dr. Feek.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. That I understand. So going forward, that's a consideration, and I 100% support that. The issue that we're dealing with currently is the amendment. We believe, as a member of the committee, that I believe that these amendments are of such an important nature, and considering the fact that according to the Act we are within the time frame. I do understand that we want to get it over and done as soon as possible, but we've got time, as has been mentioned by Honourable Mayor. We've got time until the end of July. I do understand that sometimes we have other things that we need to do. So I just believe that in view of the fact that we've never amended the budget before, it might be the first. We do have the power to amend the budget. So I think that we need to consider these proposals and let us get legal advice as to whether we are compliant with the Act, and then we can take it from there. That would be my added suggestion, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay. Let me welcome the delegation from Human Settlement, and Honourable Member Gwabaza, we welcome you. I would like to rule on the matter. I know earlier on I had said we will have to make a decision when we form a quorum, but having listened to this elaborate submission on the amendments of the appropriation bill, and also considering what it will take to amend the whole process that will have to unfold, my ruling will be that the decision making on this one be deferred so that there can be proper consultation with legal advisors. That's why they're here, to assist, so that by the time we take a decision, that decision must be a quality decision, and it must be a sustainable decision. So for now, we're not ready for that decision. So we will then defer decision making on this to the next meeting. All right. Thanks. Shall we then move on? Thank you so much for the briefing, and thanks for the, I think it's constructive engagement. And indeed, we have now resolved on the way forward on the submission. Now, in terms, I would like us to go back to our agenda. In terms of the agenda, we are now on item number. We now move on to item that says, let's correct the numbering. I think something went wrong with our numbering here. Up till number four, five is still correct, and then we have number six, and then seven, deliberations, and then announcements and correspondence will be eight, and then closing will be nine. Are we together? Okay. Just to check if the delegation from the human settlement have the agenda. Do you have? No, that's fine. Are you ready? I'll wait for you to distribute to everybody the agenda. Sandy, I want to move. I just want to check if we are all ready now. Do we all have the agenda? A copy of the agenda that will be guiding this meeting, and also the copy of the presentation. If you don't have, could you please indicate by show of hand so that you can be provided with these documents for this meeting? So we all have the documents that we need for this meeting. All right. All right. Good morning to our delegation from Human Settlements. You found that we had already started the meeting, but it's fine. You came on time because you were scheduled for after the item that we were entertaining now. I'd also like to say to greet the staff members and all guests who came in later after we had started. I'd like to welcome you to this very, very important meeting wherein we will be receiving a briefing from the Department of Human Settlements on its funding allocations as per the 2017 appropriation bill. In the process of dealing with the 2017 appropriations bill, the Money Bills Act requires the standing committees on appropriations to hold hearings on the appropriation bill and call in the various votes to assess their readiness to effectively and efficiently utilize their vote allocations. Through the appropriation bill, the executive seeks Parliament's approval and adoption of its voted spending plans. We need to see tangible progress towards attaining the MTSF objectives. I repeat, MTSF objectives, and we want to ensure that all appropriate governance controls and the delivery capacity of the vote is in place to ensure value for money, for the citizens. Indeed, progress needs to be made towards breaking apartheid's special patterns and integrating residential and commercial hubs in our cities and towns and rural areas. We need to see visible improvements in the coordination of housing and human settlement development. With these few words, I would like to once more welcome all of you. Let's relax. The approach should be, this is our meeting, and I really want us to engage in a very constructive and a meaningful manner that will indeed, at the end, bring a better life for all. As we are coming in, we have just received a submission on amendments to the appropriation bill. I must say that you are lucky, because in terms of those proposals, this department has not been touched. So you are lucky in that sense. But yes, let's proceed and with a briefing, and then let's have fruitful deliberation rather than looking forward to. These are opening remarks. Do you want to engage with the opening remarks? Okay.
For clarification, and just so that I am relaxed and that I stay relaxed, I just have two questions. First of all, the presentation was received by myself this morning.
Mm.
Now, I'm expected now to go and absorb this presentation, and I only received it this morning. Secondly, I noticed that there's quite a large delegation. Can we just get, again, clarity on there are treasury regulations, and I'm not so sure, I don't have it here now, but what is the size of the prescribed size of delegation? Because yesterday we had a presentation by one person, it was 52 pages. This presentation is 40 pages, and we've got about 2, 4, 6, 7, so many. I'll stop counting. But can we just make sure that we are consistent? You like using the word consistent? And I just need to make sure that we are consistent
okay.
in our deliberations. Thank you.
Indeed, we've got to be consistent in what we're doing so that we entrench the trust that people would want to see from government. Let me first request the secretariat and check on the communique that they sent out. Who did you invite? So that we then start from here, and then we can then get a response from our delegation. Remember, we have invited them, but what did we say in our communique? Please raise your voice so that can all hear. Yeah, you don't have it. Okay, but just raise your voices, yeah, because everybody can hear.
Now, I'm just reporting that the invitation to the department was too late. Delegation, the letter is addressed to the minister, from the director general. So the department's prerogative is what the delegation should be. National Treasury.
Okay, and we're talking cost containment or cost curtailment. So, and I take it that you are aware of that, am I right? And you are at the implementation stage of that. All right. Let's check, who is the leader of the delegation? And then your designation or DG? Okay. All right. DG, are you in a position to respond to the questions raised here? Please come in.
Chair, we can respond to that question easily. The colleagues who are at the back, Milile Aba is in the office here. He is in charge of our operations here in Cape Town. He's based in Cape Town. So as he is in the ministry here in Cape Town. The gentleman over there is in the deputy minister's office and is based in Cape Town as well. Yesterday we presented to the NCOP committee the USDG Urban Settlements Development Grant Policy. And DG Dr. Sokopo sitting behind me made a presentation there because they wanted to deliberate with us on the policy that informs the Urban Settlements Development Grant. So I asked her to stay behind. We were also presenting to cabinet yesterday the outcome aid, and I went there with the DDG who is responsible for projects and programs. We presented the two of us and he left because he has another meeting. The CFO has to be with me at all times when I present to Parliament, especially this particular presentation, because the bigger part of it is about allocations to provinces. So I always come with the CFO. Yes, we also presented to the Social Services NCOP committee yesterday as well. So I told them that there is no need for them to fly back. Again, for every committee, we decide who's the most relevant person for that particular committee. We always go as three. It's myself, the COO, and the CFO. That's what we always do. But because yesterday there were four committees that we needed to present to and where to spread ourselves, then immediately after that we regrouped and we looked at how we performed. And I asked them to stay behind the policy. The lady behind me, Dr. Sokopo, is responsible for the policy. So we took that decision, but the majority of people are based in the Cape Town office. We are implementing the cost containment measures. There are quite a number of them. We can come and present that to you. For instance, one example is that if you miss your flight and you've been scheduled to fly to Cape Town at 10 o'clock and you miss your flight, you pay back the amount of money. But there are others. It can take us the entire day to present some of the cost containment measures that we're implementing right now. But the people who are more relevant for this meeting today is myself and the CFO and the DDG who is sitting behind me, responsible for policy.
Okay. Honourable Member, do you have a follow-up question? I'm satisfied. Any other follow-up questions for other members? None. Having touched on the cost curtailment measures, we request that you, after this meeting, you submit to us your cost curtailment plan. All right. I know I had just welcomed you and then this question came, which is okay, it's fine. I can see you are ready for us. So we will now want to proceed with the business of this
which we didn't answer, the one about the documents. We submitted the documents on time, Chair. The only additional information which was submitted yesterday is detailed data, number of projects, targets by province, but what was requested was submitted as early as last week. But we just thought that let's give you additional information. The additional information which was submitted last night, yesterday, we're not going to present it here. It's just for your information.
Okay. Secretariat, can you please respond? I know that I got my document yesterday. Yesterday. And then the other members, where did you get your document? Yesterday?
Around midday.
Come again?
I'm saying around midday.
Yesterday. Yeah. So you can hear, DG, that we're talking yesterday. And you must remember, before yesterday, we've got a lot of work. So I don't know where the... I think there was a breakdown of communication. We will trace it, and I think we must correct it. It cannot be right. Is it? Cannot be correct that you get your document at night and you're expected to be familiar with the contents thereof and you prepare your questions for a robust engagement when you've just received the documents the previous day. All right. In future, at least if you can receive the documents 3 days before so that we members can prepare. Because remember, it's not only this work. There's a lot of other work that we have to look at. So this one. So, okay. Let's check on what happened because the DG, I don't think the DG can lie to us. So let's check internally on what happened. And then we will then correct and, yeah. Which means by yesterday we still didn't have. We had a meeting in the morning. I know in that meeting we asked on this information that was outstanding. We're told that they don't have. But then, as he puts it, midday, then we got the information. So we'll appreciate if you can correct, because other departments, I'm sure other committees, I know, they will then ask you to go back. Yeah? So that we can also have enough time to prepare and, yeah, do quality work for Parliament. But to avoid wasteful expenditure, we're sensitive to that. Yeah, we will not send you back. Proceed. Let's pray that God will give us wisdom to be able to proceed in a constructive and a meaningful way. Thank you. All right. Shall we then, I do want us to do introductions. I think that will assist us so that we, yeah, as a way of helping people to adapt, you know, or to settle, you know. Okay. I am Pinky Posa, I'm the chairperson of the committee. Honourable Member Gwabaza there. And you sit far, far away from me. If I want to consult with you as a whip, you're too far away from me. If you can come to this chair, I think it will help me.
Yes, I'll come over just now. I'm Daba Gwabaza, whip of the committee.
Okay.
My name is Malcolm Figg, a member of the committee.
Dr. Figg.
Morning, everybody. My name is Alan McLaughlin. I'm a member of the committee.
Honourable Member McLaughlin.
I'm Zwangida Manana, a member of this committee.
Okay. Thank you very much. We will then cross over to you, DG, to introduce your team.
Thank you, Chair. I'm accompanied by my colleagues here, the CFO. I also have behind me Dr. Zoleka Soko, who is our DG for policy and research. I have the chief investment officer also in the office of the CFO, Lucy Masilo. Next to Lucy is Swazi Taitai from the ministry. I have Joe Snomadi from the office of DG and Mimi Kaba is in the office, in the parliamentary cabinet correspondence office here in Cape Town. And then at the back there, my colleague from the office of the deputy minister, and Maria Sert in the office of the CFO. I want to assure you, Chair, that the hiccups that have taken place in terms of submitting the budget will not happen again, and I take full responsibility for that as an accounting office. We know that the standard operating rule is that we need to submit the documents at least 7 days before the committee. If we get an invitation today, we have to make sure that the document gets there 7 days in advance. All of my colleagues are aware about that. I will follow up and see where it went wrong. But the best I could do is to take full responsibility for it and correct it so that it doesn't happen again. With your permission, Chair, I'll be guided by yourself as to whether we should go ahead with the resolution.
Yes, we then move to the presentation by the Department of Human Settlements. Honourable members, I'm going to ask you to listen carefully, and thereafter you will then be given an opportunity to interrogate the presentation.
No problem.
Over to you, DG.
Thank you, Chair. Our presentation is structured into three parts. The first part is a departmental overview, which talks more to what the department is directly responsible. That's part A. Part B, we will talk more to the Human Settlements Development Grant, which is disbursed to provinces. The key question that we'll be asking there is, what will this grant buy? The 33.4 billion rands plus grant, what will it buy? Then the third part is the Urban Settlements Development Grant, which goes to the metros. The total budget that we're managing, Chair, is 33.4 billion, and it's divided into two components, and that is 19 billion goes to provinces, and plus minus 11 billion goes to the metros, and the rest goes to the entities that we are managing. So the presentation is structured into three parts. First part, which is called Part A, is departmental overview. The second part is the Human Settlements Development Grant. What are the targets? What is the allocation by province? Then the third part is the Urban Settlements Development Grant, which goes to the eight metros. And again, we ask the same question. What will it buy? What will this grant buy? Without wasting much of your time, Chair, because we would want this presentation to be as interactive as possible. So we'll try and run through the presentation so that we give you enough time to raise questions, clarity, or recommendations, whichever way you want to manage it. I'm going to ask my colleague, the CFO, to take us through Part A, and then I'll take care of Part B and Part C.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members and Colleagues. Chair, we, as Human Settlements Department, just like any other national department, was also affected by the slow economic growth of the country to an extent that the allocations, as indicative as they were in the previous year, were affected by the cut. And the department got to be cut by 3.5 odd, if not approximately 3.5 billion over the medium-term expenditure framework. And as we move along, Chairperson, we will indicate where the cuts were, and the bigger part of the cut was on our Human Settlement Development Grant. Chair, what we did during the MTEF process, or rather the MTEC process, we submitted our inputs to National Treasury. We had several inputs in terms of reconfiguring the budget of the department, because we were tasked by the letter that National Treasury had given to the department any other that we need to work within the limitations of the budget. But as a Human Settlement Department, we realized that we had more needs, and as one would talk about the restructuring of or reconfiguring the policy options of the department, we submitted a number of options to National Treasury in terms of somehow additional budget request and somehow restructuring within the same means of the resources that we had at the beginning. The slides, as shown, translate to say we looked at the restructuring capital grant that is sitting with the Social Housing Regulator Authority, which is our SHRA entity,
whereby it manages the social housing together with the provinces, and where we would have our social housing and rentals. And in that indicative, we did have an indicative allocation. However, we realized that because of the funding pressures, we had to restructure that, coupling it, Chairperson, with the institutional subsidy that comes from the Human Settlement Development Grant. So in a way, we reallocated money from the HSDG to form part of the fuller picture of the restructuring capital grant, and that was the one option that we presented. And Chair, we have a series of catalytic projects and the program in the department that is earmarked to develop and present to the nation or the community more housing, but securely and program managed differently. We had to ring fence money again from the HSDG to go specifically for the catalytic projects. So we did not request any additional funding. In fact, we had to realign it within the HSDG. Similarly with the FLISP, as well as the issue of the consolidation of the DFIs, which as we move along, the Director General will talk to it, as today it forms part of the Human Settlement Development Grant. We had to also reallocate funding from the HSDG to capitalize and consolidate the three DFIs that we have currently. We also looked at the asset verification program that is between ourselves and the houses out there with the provinces. We want to ensure that the houses that we always advocate to have been constructed have been verified as there on the ground. And lastly, Chair, we also looked at the challenges that the Northern Cape, as a small but vast, to speak, province with a little allocation that we always have, that we could get additional funding or even reconfigure within the HSDG and earmark the money to the bulk infrastructure to eradicate the backlog that we had. And the issue of the gas, which is the government employee housing scheme, which is a program that the department would take over in terms of administration and program managing from DPSA. And we were to also have a new funding because we never had this program before, and we wanted additional funding and as per the discussions that we had with National Treasury. So these policy options are the priorities, Chair.
I would appreciate it if we are given full names of all these abbreviated things, because some of us have never been to the portfolio committee. We don't understand. Thanks.
No problem. Thank you very much, Chair, and we upfront apologize for that. Yeah, Chair, with your permission, the SHRA, just to make an example, it's our entity, which is the Social Housing Regulator Authority. The issue of the FLISP is your Finance Link Individual Subsidy Program. The DFI is our Development Finance Institutions. And then the GAS, I did spoke to it, is the Government Employee Housing Scheme. And I think, Chairperson, as we move some of this.
Chair, if I may come in through you again so that we can resolve this part once and for all. The Social Housing Regulatory Authority is responsible for the provision of affordable rental social housing. They also regulate the institutions that are providing this type of housing. So it's called SHRA in full. It's Social Housing Regulatory Authority. Then the FLISP is a subsidy program that we use to provide subsidies to those who earn between 3,500 and 15,000, our target market, anyone who wants to buy a house who earns between 3,500 and 15,000 can benefit from what we call the finance-linked individual subsidy program. We have a number of programs in housing that talk to various demands. There are those who don't want to buy, and they benefit from the social housing regulatory authority. Those who want to buy, then they can benefit from the finance-linked individual subsidy program. The DFI, the CFO, has already explained it. We have three development finance institutions that were amalgamated into one, and that will be Human Settlements Development Bank. So once the three development finance institutions are amalgamated, we will create a Human Settlements Development Bank, which Minister has launched last week. The last one, the Government Employment Housing Scheme. This is a scheme that was negotiated by the employer, DPSA, and organized employees, the unions. It's a scheme that will be used to help government employees to buy houses. And it's also another program that government will use to make it easy for government employees to own homes. It's called GAS in short, but it's Government Employee Housing Scheme, which is an employer housing assisted program, so to speak. Thank you, Chair.
Very much, Chair. On that note, Chair, we submitted all these inputs to National Treasury. And as you look at the figures for the financial year that we are in as we speak, which is 17-18, we were looking at 8.6 billion, and the outer year it was 13.7 billion. However, Chair, as we had moved and had communicated with Treasury through all these processes, there was an indication from the beginning, and as we were negotiating during our bilaterals and the committees of the MTEC, that there is no possibility of the additional funding that any department or even the human settlements would receive from National Treasury. So while we had submitted these inputs to National Treasury as funding requirements and restructuring within the means of the resources that we had, within the same breath, we were still referred to the allocation as indicative as the 4.6 billion in the previous financial year. However, it got cut by 3.5 odd as we move over the MTEF. This financial year, we were affected by a 1.1 billion, and the larger part of it, Chairperson, as we move along the lines in terms of the programs that are affected, it's the Human Settlement Development Grant, as we refer it as HSDG in our presentation. Chair, the DG spoke of the overview of the department and wherein we have four programs which are also subdivided into economic classification, wherein we will have the cost to the employer, which is the compensation of employee, which was also affected by the cut, the goods and services to that effect, the grants and transfer payments to our respective provinces as well as metros was affected by a 1.1 billion and 3.5, as I indicated, oddly, towards the MTEF period and our capital assets as well. However, the programs that the department is running with, while we have a number of branches, we are running the program that is divided into four, the standard being the administration, the policy part, which is program two, the delivery support, which is the main mandate of the department in terms of the implementation program of the human settlement development, and that's program three, and lastly, which is program four, where the funding part of the department is managed and administered. So as we move along, we will be talking to program four, which where the grants are and the allocation are, which actually takes the toll of the budget in terms of the allocations from the program part of it. Chair, the next slide talks to how the economic classification is divided or is broken down and segmented into the funding that we have, I did indicate that the larger part of our budget goes to provinces and municipalities. Our compensation of employees for this financial year is 383 million, and members would notice that these cuts have affected the COE to, or the cost to the employer over the outer year, which is your 2018-19. And at the time of us receiving the allocation letter, the National Treasury did not consider the inflationary bound adjustment of 6%. So as we move along, we realize that our allocation for 2018 has slowed down more from the current allocation that we have. And ordinarily, one would expect it to be going up if you look at 19 and 20 as well. However, this is the cost to the employer. Coupling that is the issue of the goods and services, which was also mainly cut due to the cost containment or the cost curtailment around the country. The transfers and subsidies, that takes the amount of 32.5 billion. It's the amount that the department transfers to provinces, metros, as well as the entities. And we've just spoken about the Social Housing Regulator Authority, which is the SRA. And within that means you would have your Housing Development Agency, which is an HDA, that is responsible for the acquisition and maintenance of the land for human settlement developments. Then you will have your NURTURE, which is your national urban structure. Yeah, sorry, DG. And then we also have our CISOs, which is the community, excuse me, the ombudsman. So those are the number of entities that shares the 1.2 billion as referred to as departmental agencies and accounts. The rest of the money, it falls within the entities that we are committed and have an obligation to pay within the human settlement structure, where you'll have your foreign governments and international organization. That is a pretty standard as we have our UN and the national international organizations that we have in the department. Lastly is the issue of the national, which is related to the buildings, machinery and equipment from a capital part of the assets of the department. And that forms again the part of your 33.4 billion that the department has been allocated with in 17-18. And your 37.4, and this increases, Chair, approximately by 5.6 billion over the 3-year period. One of the questions and the concerns that had been raised by the committee in the letter was for the department to provide the committee with the progress in terms of the medium-term strategic framework outputs from the time that we had started. Here we are providing the committee with the performance of the department from the inception of the MTSF till the 31st of March as we close the year. However, these figures are also under audit as we speak, and the final submission of it being today to the National Treasurer, and then the final audit will begin. Chair, and if you look at the first column, and I will not touch on all of them, however, it's an indication of the information, as DJ had indicated, that we preferred to provide with the detailed information of what the committee may consume in the midst of the budget that we had in the past years, together with the last one of the 31st of March 27th, that is also under review. Chair, if you look at your total of up until March 27, we have, in terms of the households that are living in inadequate housing, and for us to provide additional houses to that and improve the conditions in which the people are, and the target of 741. To date, we had reached the households of 331,000 to that effect. The second one, which is the improvement of informal settlements in most of areas, where you would find the upgrading program that we run by the department, and we were to reach 750,000 households. To date, we had achieved 260. And as you move along the line, the issue of the individual subsidy that we spoke to, we have achieved 286. the list goes on, Chairperson, to the next slide, where one would see that there's NHB enrollment, as you do know that it's one of the entities that the department is also administering and managing, where we had to date had 512,000 projects. That represents 201,927 units registered and enrolled with NHBRC for those future defects that they may appear. However, we administer the fact that all projects need to be registered with NHBRC to fall within the category of maintenance along the lines. It goes on, Chair, to the issue of the title deeds, where we were expected as a department to would have achieved 563,000 title deeds being issued to the respectful owners and beneficiaries. We have had backlogs on this, and as we move, the accounting officer will speak largely on this. However, we indicate that to date we have issued 69,675, but we also admit that we are sitting with a backlog of 187. The next slide talks to the provincial allocations, which I did indicate, Chair, that this forms part of the bigger cut of the budget, and unfortunately it being a capital grant that is transferred and it being a subsidy that is earmarked and aimed to provide houses as the mandate of the department dictates. For the financial year 17-18, the Human Settlement Development Grant reduced by a 1.1 billion odd from 21 billion to 19.9. So in this financial year, we will be reporting and provinces will also be utilizing 19.9 to run all the programs that contribute towards the housing opportunities in terms of the mandate of the department. And the outer years has also been affected, and we did indicate that the largely part of it runs to 3.4 billion of the grant. And as one will look at it, although it shows an increase in terms of the inflationary adjustment, that 3.4 billion will affect the number of houses to be built or to be constructed and the top structures or the services that would be rendered by the provinces. So this is where we have the ability to can say that we will make means of the 19.9 to build what is necessary in terms of the business plans as projected by provinces. This tends to be the summary of what the HSDG, or rather the Human Settlement Development Grant, would buy in 2017-18 as planned in the business plan and approved by the Director General for us to be able to transfer the funds to the provinces. The budget in terms of the allocation, which, as you would see, takes the toll of 19.7 billion, wherein in terms of the programs as budgeted and any other programs that would yield housing opportunities, as well as those projects that will benefit the issue of the title deed, forms part of this structure. So this is a summary of all the units, the top structures to be built, the service sites possible, the acquisition of land where possible, and the building of the social and rental units. It forms part of the business plans of the provinces. So that takes part of your 19.7 billion. The other 2 billion goes to the planning, the issues of maintenance, the issues of your IDP linked to the municipalities, and then the rest, and that will form part of the 19.9 billion that we have in this financial year. However, in terms of the medium-term strategic framework opportunities that we would have in this financial year, the target is 176,271 housing opportunities that would be expected to be procured and paid or bought within the 16.9 billion divided. So the next slides are in terms of the breakdown of all the provinces, and by permission of the Chair, I would request that, because we've already given the summary, that we move faster and then we skip all the provinces. And then we go to slide, do you have a slide number there? where it talks to the human urban settlement development grant to Metropolitan.
Richard, through you, the slides that were skipping are provincial targets. We've given the national breakdown, but if you want to know how Eastern Cape is contracting to those national targets, you can zoom into Eastern Cape, the Western Cape allocation and the Western Cape target. So we can always come back to those provincial breakdowns. But we thought that let's not spend time on it. Let's go straight to the national targets, because the national targets are made up of provincial individual targets. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DJ. Similarly, we'll take the same approach in as far as the Urban Settlement Development Grant. The Urban Settlement Development Grant is a grant that the department transfers to metropolitan municipalities, and it forms part of the other grants that the metros would receive and report in terms of the capital budget of the city as it unfolded in the MFMA. This grant was also affected by the cut, Chairperson. It may not be much, but it does have an impact on the bulk infrastructure that may be needed by the metropolitan municipalities. As we all know that in the past we've been complaining and urging to have more money invested on the bulk infrastructure for the department and the provinces, and including the metros, who are developers, to be able to provide more top structures for conducive housing opportunities. In the 3 years of the 2017 MTEF, this grant was cut by 282 million. The first reduction is 90 million, wherein as we move from Buffalo City, they had 774 million in terms of the published figures from the 2016 DORA, and which was reduced by 6 million to 768 million. Nelson Mandela was affected by an amount of 7 million and it went up down to 911. If you take the bigger part of the Gauteng, where Ekurhuleni has the biggest cut, the biggest slice, obviously the cut would also be much larger, averagely, on that by 15.6. Mangaung was only reduced by 6 million. It's not much, but it does have an impact on the plans that had been done by the metros in their built environment plan. KZN is also receiving a 1.9 by a cut of 15 from the 90 million, and the Western Cape, who had a budget of 1.5, it goes back to 1.494, just a cut of 11 million. So, Chair, this is one of the grants that it complements the Human Settlement Development Grant, as it forms part of the alignment of what is built under the ground and what is built on the ground in terms of the houses and the top structures. So we are running a budget of 11.3 billion in 17-18. The overall metro target, it talks to all the five-year targets by metros, and it's summarized. And as the DG had indicated, some of the other slides zoom into the specific metros and for information to the committee members. If you look at this slide, it gives you an indication of what the USDG would buy, where the USDG would be servicing, and what infrastructure the USDG will be loaded on the ground for the provinces as well as the metros to be able to provide us with units and provide the issues of the shared services in terms of the sanitation and the taps. You would look at the 750 households that are supposed to be reached in terms of our MTS target. The USDG as a bulk infrastructure also contributes to that effect, because we have to ensure that we are upgrading our informal settlements for us to be able for our communities to have livable conditions in the informal settlements. The issue of the shared services is talking about the taps at the radiance meters of availability and accessibility by community members, the issues of the shared services in terms of our toilets and ablution blocks, and then you will have the water tanks also supplied to our informal settlements where we do not have any bulk installed yet, and then you will have issues of individual services to those that have sites already within their means. And it also forms part of the electricity that will be installed within this financial year. This is also a summary, Chair, and as and I indicated, the next slide talks to what each metro would spend their allocation in terms of the medium-term targets, the medium-term strategic targets. And I would also skip and refer members back to the notion that the DG had indicated that in the event the members want to zoom into a specific metro, the information possibly is on the slide. The next slide I will hand over to my Director General. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. The last two parts we're focusing on what the money will buy. We talked about the 33.4 billion rand budget, and the bigger part of it goes to metros and provinces. And look at the targets. Now, you would have noticed that in the MTSF targets, the medium-term strategic framework targets, there are three main targets that are not performing. And then the key question that probably you would want to ask is, what needs to be done to get those programs to perform? What needs to be done to mitigate the risk of poor performance? Let's start with the eradication of the title deeds program, because this is one target that is increasingly becoming very difficult to mitigate the risk of poor performance. I must say upfront that we've taken drastic measures together with National Treasury, first and foremost, to earmark and ring-fence the allocation, because what we've picked up is that provinces are more concerned about the current business and not the old business. Remember, title deeds eradication is an old business. These are title deeds that have not been handed over to communities or to individual beneficiaries pre-1994 and post-1994. So we felt that the first step is to ring-fence that budget and put conditions so that the budget can only be used to prioritize the eradication of title deeds, because those beneficiaries don't own those houses. As long as you don't have a title deed, you don't own the house. And the value of the house is linked to ownership, it's linked to the title deeds program. So we took some drastic measures to ring-fence the budget. We then gave provinces, I think, a year to gear themselves up, but we realized that still, even after we have ring-fenced the budget, provinces are still not prioritizing this particular target. And then minister took a conscious decision to appoint a task team, a panel of conveyancers, whose job will be to focus on dealing with the bottlenecks. You are aware that in some cases you may find that we have built the units, we have handed over the houses to the beneficiaries, and they have signed happy letters, but they have not received the title deeds. Why? Because some of those projects, township establishments, have not been done. Township registrations, subdivisions have not been done. If you haven't done any subdivisions, then you will not be able to get a title deed. So we're retrofitting some of the planning issues that should have been done. Every time you establish a township, you have to get land surveyors, you have to submit subdivisions. So there are big events that have not been subdivided in almost all of the provinces. So we have to fix that. There's also the question of disputes between siblings. When the title deed is there, who do you give that title deed to? Because the siblings are fighting amongst themselves. I'm sure you have seen it in a number of metros that there are title deeds that are sitting in boxes, and those title deeds cannot be dispersed to individuals because of disputes within that particular family, because the beneficiary didn't leave a will. So we have to sort out those disputes, and that is one of the reasons why Minister has appointed this task team of specialists to help us to deal with all of these issues. But they will also assist us and expedite the conveyancing aspect of it, the transferring part of it. You can't do the transferring until we have fixed all of those upstream activities. And that's what the TASTIM members have done. We've signed agreements with those TASTIM specialists. The only province that hasn't signed an agreement at this stage is the Free State, but all the other provinces have agreed to be assisted by these TASTIM members. And these are people who have 10 years, 15 years experience in conveyancing, even more than 15 years in some cases. So we've put mitigating measures in place to deal with the eradication of the tidal disease backlog. The second program, which is performing very slow, I'm sure you will ask us one day to come back and present the performance of provinces and metros. Now, you would have noticed that in the past that there are metropolitan municipalities that have not been performing in spending the USDG grant. The bigger part of informal settlements upgrading comes from that urban settlements development grant, which goes to the metros. There are two metros that have been struggling to spend this grant for the last 3 years. It's Cape Town and Ekurhuleni. And when metros are not spending the grant, it means then we are not in a position to meet the targets, particularly informal settlements upgrading. But I can confirm it here that all the provinces, they have structures in place, project governance structure in place. Western Cape has a project steering committee which is chaired by the AGOD. Eastern Cape has a project steering committee which is chaired by the AGOD, the head of department. All provinces have created structures to track the upgrading of informal settlements. Remember here, we are not talking about the building of top structures. We're not talking about building units. We're talking about prioritizing basic services. People can wait for houses, or they can build their own houses where we have delivered security of Kenya, we have delivered basic services, water, electricity. That's what this target is about. It's not about top structures. It's not about building houses in informal settlements. It's about prioritizing what we call stage two basic services. So we do have mitigating measures in place to get this program to perform. The third program, although this program is linked to the performance of the market as a whole, the property market, because there wouldn't be a need for government to come up with a finance-linked individual subsidy program if the property market was performing. And the only reason why government is intervening is because the property market is not performing. So we use this grant to incentivize banks, private funders to come into the party and give home loans to our beneficiaries, especially our target market, which is 3.5, people who earn between 3.5 to 15,000 rands a month. So this program has not been performing very well because of indebtedness in this market. A lot of individuals were highly indebted. But with the establishment of the Human Settlements Development Bank, we think that we will be in a better position to mitigate the risk. The three provinces that have been prioritizing this program, KZN, Western Cape, and Gauteng, and it's not difficult to know why, because the bulk of your people who earn in this category between 3,500 and 15,000 are in these three provinces. The biggest number of backyarders as well, because some of the people who are looking for affordable home ownership are in these three provinces. You'll find that the biggest number of backyarders are in the Western Cape, Gauteng, and KZN. We wanted to ring-fence this program because we've given provinces enough time to turn things around. So our view was that let's ring-fence the program and centralize it, even if we manage it through our entities. I must say that all the major four banks have signed up on this program, Nedbank, FNB, Standard Bank, and Absa. They've signed up for this program. We meet on a regular basis with BASA to look at mechanisms to expedite the implementation of this program. We also get data on how banks are performing in terms of providing loans to people who earn between 3,500 and 15,000. We're likely to increase the upper threshold to 20,000 in the near future because the financial services sector is already at 20,000, but the government target, the upper threshold for government is 15,000. So we may end up aligning the two, but we want to arrive at that figure through a scientific measure. We don't want to thumbsuck the upper threshold. The military veterans program is another program that has not been performing very well, and this is due to the fact that we've struggled to perfect the cleansing of the data. Remember, the administration and the verification of the data is a responsibility of the Department of Military Veterans. But we met a month ago with DMV, and we've agreed on how this program could be expedited. As we speak, there's 1,424 military veterans. That figure has been verified. We've rechecked it, and we're very comfortable with it. And we think those beneficiaries, the 1,424, can benefit in this current financial year. And these are people who come from the non-statutory veterans organizations. Remember, we target both the non-statutory military veterans and statutory military veterans. But because the non-statutory military veterans, the majority of them are destitute, they struggle. They have no pensions, unlike your statutory ones who have pensions that can sustain themselves. So we thought, this is just a question of prioritization, but we'll deal with all veterans. The social housing and rental housing sector, here we have a stable organization. I'm sure you have seen it in the media over the years, that this program was not very stable. We didn't have a CEO. We had to dissolve the board more than 2 years ago. Now we have a very stable organization led by a well-experienced CEO. We've got the target, we've got pipelines of projects. We think that we can still meet our MTSF target here. We have quite a number of social housing institutions that have submitted projects for social housing. All what is outstanding is the increase of the income bands. We think that we need to increase those income bands so that they are in line with the finance-linked individual subsidy program. The upper threshold here, again, will move up to 15,000 so that we cover people who earn between 1,500 all the way up to 15,000 income groups. All what we're expecting now is to increase the subsidy quantum. Minister has confirmed to increase the subsidy quantum, which is sitting at 125,000 per unit to 55,000 per unit, and also increase the income band. And that is likely to happen probably this week or next week. The other program, which is, it is performing, this one is performing, but it's not just about acquiring land. It's also about packaging projects. We're not in the business of banking land. We're in the business of acquiring land for human settlements. So once we have acquired that land, it needs to be rezoned. It needs to be packaged into a project. We need to plan for that piece of land, and then we need to appoint contractors or developers to develop the land. So we've got a program that we're managing together with the Department of Public Enterprise, because some of the land is owned by the entities which fall under the Department of Public Enterprise, Rural Development and Land Reform. They're part of that, Public Works. Quite a number of parcels of land belongs to Public Works. And that particular committee is chaired by one of our DDGs, who's a chief operations officer in the department and is working very closely with DDGs in other departments. There is improved monitoring. The rezoning target has been discussed with the HDA, and we're quite comfortable that that target will be achieved. The governance issues, Chair, that you may want to know, how are we dealing with those governance issues, issues that were raised by the AG? I'm going to ask the CFO to talk briefly to those issues and perhaps tell the committee what is it that we're doing to correct all of those issues.
Thank you very much, DG. It's important to indicate and acknowledge that the department in the previous financial year, 15-16, from the governance point of view and from the AG part, that while we had received an unqualified audit opinion by the Office of the AG, we had two major issues that they saw it fit that they should put them in the management letter and in the annual report as the issue of the matters that they would want to emphasize the department to give more attention to and focus on them for them not to reoccur, is the issue of the 30 days payment in terms of the PFMA that at some point the department was not meeting for the past 2 years, wherein you would have different payment dates and different periods that you would pay your suppliers. Some even go beyond the 60 days that the supplier would wait and receive his salary or his payment. And that was raised as one of the major matter of emphasis from the AG's point. The other issue was the issue of the material understanding that the department has been having in the past 3 years in terms of the program of the national upgrading for informal settlement. And Chair, those two have been advocated to be the major part because they do impact on the cash flow of our service providers and the fact that we would take money back to National Treasury should we not spend it. So we had to put some controls and some consequence measures in the event that if an official is affected by not paying or adhering to the National Treasury regulation, they would suffer the consequences of not maintaining the standards of the National Treasury and the PFMA. However, from the issue of the material underspending, we also have kept that in this financial year. We managed to at least spend the budget, which was contributing to the non-statutory prescripts in terms of the law. And we have in place the implementation plan for the MPET, which is a program that is run between ourselves and National Treasury in terms of the reporting standards. And that is being rigorously managed between ourselves and DPME, the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation in the President's office. Chair, we submit our annual financial statements on time and we prepare them and we administer closely that they are prepared in terms of the principles of accounting as well, and just so that we avoid any qualification to that effect. And the department has also adhered to the PFMA in terms of the Section 26 and 37, wherein our estimates of national expenditure have been submitted in terms of the prescripts of the MTEF situation and the MTEC and the database as well. The department has in place the human resource plan that is being implemented. And, Chair, you would realize that from the plan that we have in terms of it goes broader to the issue of the positions that are not vacant, that are vacant, that needs to be filled, the issues of the staff retention and the issue of the management of the leave in line with the human resource standards. That plan is in place and is being implemented by the department. However, we want to also assure the committee in terms of the process that we are undertaking in terms of the filling of vacant position as advertised. But we want to emphasize again that for these 3 years, that the budget has been affected. We took a stand as the department that we will fill them on a contract basis until the economy is stabilized. Chair, in terms of our procurement plan, we also allow it to maintain the budget that we're having. The plan is also approved in line with the PFMA and Treasury regulation. The plan is implemented across the department and across all the programs, wherein if a thing is not in the procurement plan, unless otherwise dictated, the acquisition of such services will have to get a special permission or not being implemented at all. But it also depends on the priority to that effect. Thanks.
Pieces of legislation that we are processing, Chair, I'm not going to go through all of them in detail. I'll just list them. The first one is the Home Loan and Mortgage Disclosure Bill, published for public comments. This is what we always refer to as LAMDA. It allows us to get all the data from the banks as to how they are performing in terms of giving loans to our target market. The Prevention of Illegal Eviction Bill, we are amending this. We're not overhauling the entire bill. This is what is commonly known as the PIE Act, which simply means that the fact that people have invaded property illegally, it doesn't mean that the eviction must be illegal as well. You have to follow legal processes to evict the invaders. We are amending certain aspects of that bill. The same applies to home loan and mortgage disclosure bill. We are amending certain sections of that bill because there is an act in place. The third one is the Housing Consumer Protection Bill. We are also making amendments here on the Housing Consumer Protection Bill. We can share those specific clauses that will be affected, that will be amended with the committee. There's the Draft Human Settlements Development Bank Bill. You heard us earlier talking about establishing the Human Settlements Development Bank. It can only be established through an Act of Parliament. So we've got that bill, which will come to Parliament for promulgation. We haven't presented it for public comment yet. It will inform the establishment of the Human Settlements Development Bank. There is the Property Practitioners Bill. One of our entities, the Estate Affairs Agency Board, is still regulated by the 1976 Act, and we think that we need to transform this market. This is one big market which is not very much transformed, and I'm sure you heard the President in the State of the Nation's address. He touched on this particular market, that there is more urgency to get this market transformed, but this piece of legislation will allow it, will make it possible for us to transform the property market, transform the market, and also transform even the practitioners who are very much active in the market. And remember, EAAB is regulating this particular sector. The licenses that get given to the estate agencies, those licenses are given to those agencies by the Estate Affairs Agency Board. So that piece of legislation was published for public comment. We think that now we'll be ready to engage with the bill so that we can enhance the quality of that bill. A departmental communication program that profiles the work of the department and that of the sector has been implemented, and it covers some of the of these pieces of legislation. I'm not going to spend time on this one. I think we've already touched on it, but it's about amalgamating the three entities. But it's not just getting the three entities together. It's about creating a new entity that will focus on providing end-to-end financing of human settlements activities, funding end users, funding developers, funding projects. That's basically what this bank will do, and it will also crowd in private sector participation, and we will use this plan to leverage more funding for human settlements projects. As I said, the bill was published for public comment. Policy and support. Provinces have been supported with the PHP policy, which is one of our what we call the self-help program. That's where the majority of people come together, and they become actively involved in building their own homes. The draft white paper for human settlements is being managed. Dr. Sakopo is leading that process together with colleagues in the presidency. And this, again, is intended to overhaul human settlements policies. Remember, we're still using the Housing Act, despite the fact that we've moved from housing to human settlements. So we now need the Human Settlements Act and not the Housing Act. So this process of coming up with a white paper, it will inform the end stage will be the passing of the Human Settlements Act, and we've started the process of drafting the bill. The accreditation framework has been revised to allow for improved accreditation and assignment. We are of the view that the approach that we took in the past in terms of accreditation didn't work. It was simply a compliance arrangement. It has to be linked to performance. When we accredit a metro, it has to be about performance, and it has to be about transforming what one would call apartheid spatial legacies. Again, 41,849 land acquired during quarter four. However, there is a slow progress on rezoning. We touched on this earlier in terms of our land target. Chair, we brought the draft backyard rental policy. It has to go to MINMEC and for approval. We've got the USDG policy. It has been finalized and awaiting tabling. We will probably have to go to cabinet because there are other departments that are affected there. The social and rental housing income bans and grant quantum, that has been revised and is waiting minister's approval. It only needs minister to approve those income bans and requires the quantum. In summary, Chair, the overall reported expenditure by provinces, this is the financial year that has just ended. We're sitting at 98%. Eastern Cape and Western Cape provinces reported full expenditure. A total of 353 million was reported as unspent by provinces. And this is Northwest, and Northwest province is the lead contributor. About 200 million was not spent by Northwest towards the end of the financial year. All the unspent funds will be subjected to rollover processes as per Section 22 of the 2016 DORA. Provinces reported a total delivery performance of 83%, which means that they failed to deliver 17% of what they have contracted to achieve in the last financial year. The National Department did not meet its annual targets of 175,000 houses. The last time I checked the verification, we were sitting at 166,000 of the total target. But Chair, this is just for your information, because the request for today was about this current financial year, not so much about what happened in the previous financial year. But we just thought that it's proper and important to share with you, maybe use this opportunity just to share with you how we've performed in the last financial year. So I'm not going to give you all of that information. I must say, Chair, the most important part in this slide is that we delayed the approval of the business plan of Eastern Cape, Gauteng, and Free State. The approval of the business plan in this current financial year. Why? Because there were serious cash flow management challenges in Eastern Cape and the Free State, and we wanted to make sure that those two provinces deal with those cash flow problems, because if you don't deal with cash flow problems, it affects contractors, and some of the contractors who are working with us in this space are emerging contractors. And if you don't pay them on time, their cash flow gets affected as well, and they will eventually go under. So we decided to delay the approval. We only approved 2 weeks ago the business plan of Eastern Cape, Gauteng, and Free State. We delayed Gauteng because Gauteng has not been performing very well over the last 2 years. So we felt that this is the year where we have to make sure that we sort out and we put proper mitigators up front. There are big projects in Gauteng, there are big developers in Gauteng, and we're quite convinced that they will be able to turn the picture around in this current financial year. And that is why we delayed the approval of the business plan. Chair, the minister through MINMEC holds the provinces and municipalities accountable for ensuring the 30-day payment. As you are aware, this is a standing item in every MINMEC. We discuss this issue, we look at those provinces that are not paying contractors on time. The rule is that contractors have to be paid within 30 days. We track this through the housing subsidy system. We can tell you in no ambiguous terms who is the best performer when it comes to this and who is the worst performer. We do have that data. The department has reviewed its monitoring and evaluation capability, and as part of a reviewed structure which is pending approval by DPSA, we've tweaked our structure so that we are able to be more hands-on and to focus on what's happening on the ground. As you know, more than 31 billion rands of that 33.4 billion rands budget goes to provinces. So therefore, we have to follow the money. We have to be more hands-on in managing this program. The departmental vacancy rate is being managed. We've advertised. We think that we'll be able to fill all of those vacant positions within the next 3 years. Unfortunately, Chair, because of the budget cuts, we will not be able to fill those as permanent positions. We can't commit on the budget that we don't have. We can only commit up to 3 years. Because of budget cuts, we talked about the compensation of employees ceiling, so we will not be in a position to fill most of our vacant positions as permanent positions. We can fill them as contract positions. In other words, we'll have to enter into a 3-year contract with most of the people that we will be appointing into those positions. It is recommended that the committee notes the presentation detailing non-financial performance made during quarter four of 2016-2017. It is recommended that the committee notes the presentation detailing the preliminary report for quarter four and note that the qualitative targets of delivery are preliminary and will be subject to change in the annual report currently in the process of being validated. This is just the figures for the last financial year. Like I said, we were sitting at 156,000 of the 175,000 target that we have contracted to achieve last year, but those figures will still have to be audited and finalized. Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks a lot for your time.
Well, thank you so much for the elaboration and the informative report. Honourable members, I'm now going to ask you to reflect on the report and engage. Honourable Member Manana, Honourable Member Peake, okay, I will also ask a question with your permission. I will then ask Honourable Member Manana to intervene.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also thank the department for this presentation. Now, I'm just having some few points of clarification. The first one is with regards to the title deeds. The extent of title deeds, backlog in Western Cape, Northwest, Mpumalanga, and it's Western Cape, Northwestern Mpumalanga, is unacceptably high. I heard the DG saying there's a task team. If you can give us the time frame and the terms of reference of that task team, because really we're very concerned with regards to this matter. The second issue is with regards to the two metros, Echebwini Municipality and Ekurhuleni. These two metros will experience a biggest reduction to the tune of 15.7 million, respectively. What has been the reaction of these two metros? The third one, Chairperson, is based on the submitted business plan and other support document to the department and the observations, are all 8 metros ready to effectively utilize the total budget of 11.4 billion allocated for the development of urban settlement? And I must find out whether does the department have the adequate monitoring capacity to effectively oversee the effective implementation of this 11 billion. The last one, Chairperson, is with regards to the AG report. I wanted to find out from the department, when is the department going to get a clean audit? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation from the department. And there's some technical stuff here, but nevertheless, I'm sure you've explained it adequately. I want to start with the presentation and some clarification question on slide number 4, and again it's more. I see there are some it's page 4 and slide number 8. There are some line items there. For example, in slide number 8, interest and rent on land and higher education institutions, non-profit institutions, and so forth, where there are zero figures. Now, why would that be? Just a question. I just don't understand why you'd put that there and there's zero figures, no figures, just for information. Then on slide number 35, which in this document is on somewhere around page number 18, there are a few issues, and again, this is the issue of the title deeds, which has become a serious problem which you have identified as well. So I have a few questions on that slide number 35 to the Department, Honourable Chair. First of all, I just need clarity on the backlog with regards to Cape Town and Ekurhuleni. You've indicated there. Is it a departmental, or does the province get involved as well? Where is it driven? Because I remember somewhere, I think it was in the Eastern Cape, where my understanding is that it is a departmental issue, but I believe that there should be assistance from your provincial department, but I believe that the provincial department was asked not to intervene. Now, I just want to ask, is this the same case? Does the department, the national department as well as the provincial department work hand in hand? In addition to that, there seems to be some sort of a problem with regards to, I was talking to somebody the other day, where they built, for example, a building, something, and I know you deal with human settlements, but is there that intergovernmental relation? How is that? Because sometimes we find that with regards to public works, and I know it's not yourselves, where schools and public buildings are built, but then there's no access roads and there's no electricity and water and sanitation. So I just would like to know, is that collaboration up to date and up to scratch, or you know, how are we doing with regards to that? I have a question as well. My honourable colleague asked a question about timeline, but I just want to add to that question in terms of the this task team with regards to the title deeds. The timeline is important, but I also, you indicated in your presentation that the Free State haven't signed. What is going to happen? I mean, it's a directive from the national department, and yeah, you have a provincial department. And I know it's possible that to some extent you don't give them instructions, but surely if they don't sign a document, then surely somebody's going to suffer. And the sad part of it is that the people are suffering while the officials are still, in some or most cases, no action is taken. So I just would like to get clarity on that and comment on that. On slide number 38, which is over the page, you indicate your governance issues, which obviously would look good. Now, I noticed when you did your presentation, CFO, you didn't comment on the functioning of, you say there's a functional internal audit and audit committee. How's that going? How functional is it? Do you get regular reports? Can I just give an indication on that? And then the human resource plan, you indicate there that due to financial constraints, that staff is employed on or appointed on a contract basis. Now, that contract, you say it's in line with the human resource plan, but we know that there's other legislation which employees cannot be appointed for longer than 3 months, anyway, specified period, or else they're deemed to be permanent employees. So I'm not questioning your ability, but you know, sometimes it might be something that could be overlooked. So, you know, I just, from my side, a comment is that we just need to make sure that it is in line with that, because we don't want a situation where you appoint someone in a contract basis for a number of periods and then eventually they're deemed to be permanent employees. And then my last comment, Honorable Chairperson, is on slide number 43. What do I want to ask here? Yeah, there's a, your third bullet point, you indicate that, I know that you indicate that it's subjected, all unspent funds will be subject to rollover process. My concern is that rollovers are not automatic. So in some instances, you know, so how far is that? How far is that one? What's your, I mean, obviously you will say that, sorry, I don't mean to, you will say that we will get it, but, yeah, but what's the chances of that? And then the other concern here, again, we come up with this from time to time, the third last bullet point where you indicate three provinces have reported a joint accrual amount. Now, we know why there is, you indicated that there's cash flow problems. So what are we going to do? Because that is a lot of money. I mean, 896 million rand needs to be funded somewhere. It's supposed to have been funded from the 2016-17 budget. Now it appears as though, on slide number 43, it's going to have to be funded, I'm assuming that it's going to have to be funded from the 2017-18 budget. Now what happens then? It takes 896 million out of a budget for work that has been done in a previous year. So, you know, it's just a problem. That I hope I'm wrong. And then, Honorable Chair, thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you, Dr. Peek. DG, in the presentation on slide 19, the page, not slide, sorry. Oh, yeah. Yeah, page 19, not slide. All right. Now, the CFO gave us a narrative on the improvement plan for MPET. Now, we are now in the midterm of your 2019 MT, medium term strategic framework. Yeah? And then this one to us, it's not giving us information. It's just, yeah, general. We would like to get a breakdown of what exactly are you doing. Yeah? Because we can't just dismiss this by saying they are implementing the improvement plan. But also on your Department of Human Settlement, your MPET 2016 report there. We must congratulate you for your strat plan, which was in full compliance, was found to be in full compliance. But then your annual performance plan was non-compliant. It's MPET 2016 report. I have it here in front of us. I don't, if it's wrong, you will correct us, but isn't it we using the information that we have before us. Non-compliant. Now, why? It's an annual performance plan. Because indeed it has to be, you know, it has to be compliant. And at least if we know that it's compliant, at least there's a, you know, good starting point. There is a plan, a credible plan, that when it's implemented, it will give us a quality outcome, meaning that it will make an impact. All right? And then we then come your monitoring and evaluation. I know one honorable member also asked about your monitoring and evaluation unit. We have found that departments don't use that unit effectively. It is a unit that on a monthly basis is supposed to check on the actual implementation of your plan and also evaluate the impact. But here, your monitoring and evaluation was found to be also partially compliant. Now, if you don't have a strong monitoring and evaluation unit, how can we then be assured of actual delivery of your program or actual implementation of your program? Right? And then on your service delivery improvement plan, you also found to be non-compliant. DG, the APP is non-compliant, service delivery improvement plan non-compliant. Now, I'm sure you'll be able to share with us on what is the problem and what exactly is being done to turn the situation around. Now, coming to governance issues. Okay, in your report you are saying that the department has a functional internal audit unit and audit committee. But also somewhere in your report when we look, you have had difficulties of moving to a clean audit. What is the problem? Because your internal audit unit, if it's fully functional, then it means it will work hand in hand with your monitoring and evaluation and submit to the audit committee on a quarterly basis. And if you've got a fully functional audit committee, by now you should have moved to a clean audit. What is the challenge and what are you doing about it? Because we really want people to trust this government. Can only happen if you do your work effectively and efficiently. Right? And then again, there's I'm looking at your MPET report for 2016. There's a professional ethics that is non-compliant, cooperative governance on ICT, non-compliant. And DG, if you have your fully qualified staff, why are we having all this? Are they skilled? But also if they're not skilled, you know it's your responsibility to train them. It's called in-service training, so that they are capacitated to do their work effectively and efficiently. Now, for any strat plan to be effectively implemented, you need an organogram that is approved by DPFA. Now, I'd like to know if your organogram was submitted to DPFA for approval. Explanation, the non-payment within 30 days.
You see, this government has committed itself to a radical socio-economic transformation, but I'll leave the socio for now and say radical economic transformation. As government fail to pay the service providers, that also impacts on their performance and also impacts on the economy. So can you give us an explanation and on whether you can commit to turning the situation around? Because it's an old problem. It's an old problem, and it is wrong. This one should not just be seen as a deviation. It's a violation of the EPFMA. Yeah, even on the MPEG, it says partially compliant or partial compliance. I think I'm talking to your internal controls, because if you have those in place and you have your monitoring and evaluation and you have your audit committee, why are we not able to move to the next level, which is why are you not able to move to the green audit? I think these would be the questions for me for now. And then I will then hand over to you, DG, and your team to respond to the questions.
Thank you, Chair, for the questions. I think they were all relevant for this meeting. Let me start with your questions and then work backwards. The one on the audit issues. We do have a functioning monitoring and evaluation unit at a chief directorate level. We also have a system that we use within that unit called the HFS unit, which is more of your subsidy payment system. Every unit that we build and every beneficiary that receives a subsidy, it has to go through that system. And there is 100% compliance by provinces. So what we do, the three layers of monitoring and evaluation in the industry. Every house that we build, you start with the units, every house that we build, we issue a warrant for that house, a five-year warrant. Just like if you buy a car, you get a warrant, five-year warrant. For anything that happens to that car in the five-year period, then you can activate the warrant. The NHBRC, the National Home Builders Registration Council, the rule is that every project that we implement, housing project, that project has to be registered with NHBRC for warranty purposes. Every home builder, in this case the company that builds, that company has to be registered with NHBRC. We can give you examples of companies that are blacklisted because they're not registered with NHBRC. We can give you examples of projects that were stopped because the registration of the NHBRC was not in place. We got them. Even if you go to the NHBRC website, you will see those blacklisted companies or projects that were stopped because they didn't follow the proper processes. So that's one layer of monitoring. And that is why when we do the planning, this business plan that we're submitting for this year, NHBRC does inspection on each and every project. They have more than 201 inspectors throughout the country. And in fact, that number is growing on to it because there is a big demand for inspection. So that's the first layer of quality control. The second layer is that we do sampling because we check in the system and we verify with NHBRC, and on a quarterly basis, we do performance reviews with provinces, which are chaired either by myself or the DDG responsible for programs and projects. So we do reviews. We look at the performance of the projects that were submitted in the business plan. We look at the appointment of contractors. We look at the targets. We also ask NHPRC to see to those reviews so that we can cross-check. We think, Chair, that there are good layers of monitoring and evaluation. But you ask the question, if you have all of these things and they are functioning, why do we still have some of these things in the MPEC, some of these partial compliance or non-compliance there? Let's start with the strategic planning one, because there is an issue about strategic planning. In the financial year 2015-2016, one of the things that we discussed with DPME, the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation in the President, is the customization of the targets, what they always refer to them as technical targets. Because remember, you have to, with the concurrency of the housing function, the MEC and the minister, they're both responsible for this function. They were of the view that our targets that we submit in the APP are not very much in line with the provincial APPs. We simply focus on program three, which is the business plans. The money that we give to provinces, it buys more program three targets, that is the house, the service site, planning, and all of those things that are in planning is in program two. So they wanted us to customize our APP because we give the money to provinces to buy these things and then we monitor them. And they say it must show in your APP that when provinces don't perform, you also don't perform by association because you're not managing them, you must manage them. So I think that's the part which probably caused a non-compliance in terms of the strategic plan. We submitted the APP, we submitted everything on time, but we didn't agree on the technical indicators that needed to go into the APP. And we accepted our fate and we said, let's move on and correct it. You will see it in this current financial year. We have tightened those targets. We spent months and months with provincial AGDs making sure that what they present to the provincial legislature is exactly what we are going to present to the national legislature. The targets are the same. Because we picked up that they submit certain things to us and then they submit different things to the provincial legislature. So we've closed that gap. We can tell you, as you can see, we didn't spend time on provincial targets. But if you go to those provincial targets, we know how many title deeds we're going to get out of Eastern Cape, we know how many units we're going to get, and we know per quarter as well what is it that we need to get. In the past, we didn't dwell too much on quarterly technical indicators, but it's resolved now. I can comfortably say that all of those things were resolved about customizing the APP. Audit committee, we are the fully functioning audit committee chair. We meet regularly. The last meeting was last week. We're discussing the financial statements, the annual report. Remember, Chair, internal audit, the bigger part of internal audit is to tell us where we are likely to get problems. The internal audit has to make findings before the external audit gets and find and make those findings. I think they've done their job. They've done an excellent job in terms of asking us to pay attention to some of these things. One of them, which you've outlined yourself, is the ICT space. I think it is a management issue more than, it's not an internal audit issue. Internal audit is fully functional and you will see it in all of their reports. They've highlighted this issue. I think it's been a management issue. I think in some cases, as of last week, in fact this week, we had a 1 hour discussion as senior management. We meet on a monthly, sorry, on a weekly basis, every Monday, to discuss the performance of the organization. One item that we spent almost an hour on was the capacity and the strategic capability of the managers in that component, including the CIO. And we've taken a decision on how to resolve it, because we think most of those things about the ICT steering committee and the functioning of the ICT steering committee are management issues. And these are issues that are preventing us from getting a clean audit. If you resolve that issue on ICT and you resolve the 30-day payment, you have a clean audit. The AG told us that you only have two things. If you resolve these two things, you have a clean audit. You have an unqualified audit. But we will have an audit with no emphasis, with no matters, if we can resolve these two. So the point that you're making, Chair, we've noted it as management, and we think that it is resolvable. It's not an insurmountable problem. The AG has made this point very clear to us, that solve these two things, you're likely to get a clean audit. You're likely to get an audit with no emphasis. I want to go back to the other question about the title deeds. The first question was about the time frames, the appointment of the task team members. We do have task team members. Minister has already appointed them, and we've given them 3-year contracts. They're doing two things. You asked about the terms of the things. Their work is divided into two main categories, broad categories. The one part is to give us advisory services on how best to resolve some of the problems. Because in title deeds, you have planning issues, you have land surveyor issues, you have conveyancing issues, and you have disputes between the siblings. Conveyancing is easy because it's transferring the asset, but in issuing a title deed. But you will not be able to do it. You won't be able to conveyance or transfer if you haven't sought out your planning issues, which are your upstream activities. You need to sort that, so you will need your land surveyor. So these task team members that Minister has appointed, they will do all of that. They will help us to deal with disputes, they will help us to do conveyancing, they will help us to retrofit some of the plans, open township registrations, and they will do almost everything that we need to do to eradicate that backlog. And that is why we didn't limit their work to just simple conveyancing. We wanted them to do everything, because provinces have been grappling with this target for some time, and you see it in the performance of provinces. Last year, we ring-fenced 306 million rands. They only spent 50% of that ring-fenced budget on title deeds. They moved the money to other things. This year, we will not allow that to happen, and that is why we got the task team members to be allocated to provinces. We can give you a list and the names of those task team members and which provinces they are allocated to. And the contract is a 3-year contract, because we're working towards the MTSS period. It's up to March 2019, the end of this term of government period, because we can't contract beyond that, and we can't contract beyond 3 years. So we've got the timelines, we've got the terms of reference or the scope of work for the task team members, and we've got a three-party agreement that we have signed with provinces, because we'll pay for the advisory services. Provinces will pay for conveyancing, because the money for conveyancing is in provinces. So that information we can share it with you, honourable member. Then the other part is the capacity of the department to monitor the 11 billion rands budget that goes to the metros. And linked to that question is the question of Cape Town and Eboli, as the two metros have not been performing. Perhaps before I get to this, let me go to the first question about the reduction of Etegwini and Eboli budget. Because there was a question about how did they respond to that reduction. I don't think that Eguruleni will have a problem with the reduction. I think they have, one could argue that they have caused this for themselves. Both Eguruleni and Cape Town cannot complain about the reduction, because the rule is very simple. If you don't use your budget, you lose your budget. But they didn't lose that amount because of performance, but because they have been underperforming for the last 3 years. So if there is a cut, you can't complain, because you're not spending your money. The only metro that can complain, because it's been performing very well consistently for a number of years, is Etegwini. The Tegwini has been spending 100% of its allocation every year, the USDG allocation. So they may complain and say we are being punished, yet we've been performing. But Chair, I must stress this point that it's not only human settlements that has received cuts. I think I will be irresponsible if I come here and complain about the cuts, because almost every department has received budget cuts. In fact, the Urban Settlements Development Grant budget, the cuts are not significant. The biggest cuts are on the Human Settlements Development Grant, the grant that goes to provinces. You heard the CFO talking about billions. For instance, the cut for this year out of the Human Settlements Development Grant is more than a billion. But the cut for the USDG is about 90 million. So it's not very significant. The impact is not big on the metros, but it is big on the provinces. I think it's provinces who have been complaining bitterly. I haven't heard metros complaining about that cut. Then coming back to the Cape Town and the Ekurhuleni part, I think we do have IGR structures in place. Minister last year met with the mayors, all the mayors. We agreed on what the USDG grant must buy. And Minister discussed the Urban Settlements Development Grant policy with all the mayors. And all of them, they agreed. They were all represented. But also at a technical level, we have a good working relationship with all the HODs, from the metros, from the provinces, and at national. But I think the point that you were driving at is around intergovernmental planning, which I don't think we've perfected it. At some point, you may ask the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, the President, to come and present to you. They have presented this to us. That if there's one area that we need to perfect in the built environment, is intergovernmental planning. The three spheres of government have to plan together. We need to create a joint pipeline that all the three spheres of government can talk to. If you recall, during the World Cup, we used to have those local organizing committees. The good thing about it, I know that not everything went well during the World Cup with collusions and all of those bad things. But the good thing about the World Cup is the establishment of the joint planning, which forced all the three spheres of government to plan together and achieve the target. We always joke about this, that we all knew that on the 11th of June 2010, there will be a kickoff, and then we started planning backwards, all of us as three spheres of government. That's the approach that we need to adopt, that all the three spheres of government needs to focus on creating a pipeline of projects and then have that joint planning. Right now, we're not planning jointly as the three spheres of government, but we are getting there. There are provinces that have perfected this. There are provinces that are still struggling to perfect this. Again, if you go back to Cape Town and the Ekurhuleni, it has a lot to do with planning. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how you look at it, it has a lot to do with leadership, because in the administration. Because once we appoint people to get these things done, we have to go find the right skill to make sure that these things are done. The danger, though, is that Ekurhuleni and Cape Town's poor performance is affecting our targets. If you've noticed that, we're not meeting the informal settlements upgrading targets because of poor performance in the metros. The Urban Settlements Development Grant, the bigger part of that grant goes into funding informal settlements upgrading. So if metros don't perform, we don't perform. We get affected because the money for funding informal settlements upgrading is there. There was a question about the 896 million rands accruals from the three provinces. The reason why we delayed approving the business plan, we wanted to agree with them on how to reduce those accruals. Because accruals eat up the value of your grant. I think you explained it explicitly, that if you don't if you start the year with significant accrual, then it reduces the value of your allocation. We discussed it. Our biggest concern was not so much Gauteng, because Gauteng has a bigger budget, 5.6 billion rands. Our biggest concern was Eastern Cape and Free State. And what it does, it affects the liquidity of your contractors. Because if you have accruals, it means you're going to take some time to pay contractors. And it comes back to the question about the 30 days. We called Eastern Cape and we told them in no ambiguous terms that we have to fix this problem this year, because it's been recurring for the last 2 years. We can't continue with it this year. You will see it in the business plan, the measures that they have taken. And Chair, you can invite the three provinces as well to come here with us, and we can go through that business plan, and we will demonstrate to you how we're dealing with those accruals, because we really didn't want to end the year with more accruals, because more accruals eat up the value of the grant, and more accruals make it difficult for the province to manage its cash flow. And if the province is not managing its cash flows, you are not going to pay your contractors in 30 days. So it has a ripple effect. So we spent time, we delayed the business plan, and we said, we are not going to sign that business plan. We're not going to submit it to Treasury until you demonstrate how we are going to manage the accruals. There is no other way, Chair. I guess this year, what the Eastern Cape has done, we told them that you have projects that are running. You have a very busy construction pipeline. You can't appoint new contractors, because if you're appointing new contractors, you're appointing them on the budget that you don't have. Let's fix the problem that you have. We will upscale in the middle of the year. We put them into terms that will monitor the process up until the budget adjustment, which is up to July, August. And they have agreed. And it means in practical terms that if your budget in Eastern Cape is 2.3 billion rands and you have an accrual of about 300 million, your budget is 200 million. That's basically what it means in practical terms. So we then said to Eastern Cape, if you're going to make any new commitments, those commitments must talk to 2 billion, not to 2.3 billion. So this year, treat your budget as if the allocation is 2 billion, so that we can fix this problem once and for all. Then you will recover in the next financial year. Again, Chair, I must say, Minister has instructed the accounting office, the National Accounting Office, to write warning letters to those two HODs, the HOD of Eastern Cape and the HOD of the Free State, because committing to a budget that you don't have is a misconduct in terms of PFMA. So we have given them some warnings, and we've asked them. In fact, there is a MINMEC resolution that talks to this item, and it will be corrected. And both HODs have accepted that. Chair, I'm going to ask the CFO to respond to some of the questions about the 30-day period. I think I've answered the 30-day period insofar as provinces are concerned. I have not answered the 30-day period insofar as the department, what is within our direct control. So I'm going to ask the CFO to respond to that question. And there was also a question about the impact. The CFO may want to cover that. There is a relationship between the service delivery innovation. What is it called? The improvement plan. There is a relationship between the improvement plan and the compliance in terms of the annual performance plan. You have to state it in the beginning of the year, how we are going to deal with the improvement plans. We usually refer to it as service delivery innovation plan. How are you going to do things differently this year in terms of your APP? All of those things, the technical indicators, the customization of the targets, and the service delivery innovation plan, all of those three things are interrelated. If you perfect the finalization of the APP and you follow all of those things that DPSA, they always hold us accountable on, then you will be able to comply I think we have struggled for some time to deal with that part. But in this current financial year, Chair, we are more than willing to come back here and present to you to demonstrate how we have corrected those things, because they've been recurring for almost 2 years now. CFO.
Thank you very much, DG. Let me start with the, or rather carry on from the 30 days part. And I think one of the reasons that one could put forward is why we're not paying within the 30 days. Chair, we've picked up a number of reasons why in most instances our invoices do not reach the system within the time frame of the Treasury Regulation and MFMA. The first one that I would mention, and of which we have already put controls into place, is the issue of the staff negligence. Chair, you would find instances whereby an individual official would have an invoice, forget about the invoice, and by the time it reaches the finance unit, it has some limitation of 3 days. And when it reaches the finance, it already has a date stamp. But in the eyes of the supplier, it was submitted on time. And the supplier would begin the date from the time that he submitted the invoice to the department, of which, fairly to the supplier, we cannot backdate the invoice just for the purpose of audit and us meeting the 30 days. And the controls that we've put in place, and I think we've already indicated even to our audit committee that we are applying the consequence management to the individual. Because if you do not do that, Chairperson, it becomes a norm. And people will say, just say, no, I'll give it to finance and finance will pay. And at the end of the day, it does have an impact and it suddenly becomes the financial problem, but it's a departmental problem. But as a management, we've taken a conscious decision to say we will handle these things in a very performance-based manner for the individuals who find themselves in that kind of negligence. The second one is the issue of the disputes. Now, when we look at those invoices that have disputes, obviously you'll have an invoice that is submitted twice, an invoice that has different kinds of invoice numbers, but it's the same invoice in the system. When you log it into the system, it gets kicked off by either the logis or the bus, because the invoice number and the commitment in the system has already been logged in. And those invoices, we'll dispute them with the supplier. It becomes a tossing and turning of the communication that we have with the supplier. However, the error, if not the mistake that we always commit, is that by the time it gets finalized as resolved as a dispute between ourselves, the legal office, and the supplier, we do not put and agree on a common date of that particular moment, wherein when it gets to the system, it does not calculate back as at the time of which it was received by the department. And the other issue is when you would have an invoice that is sitting in a unit that one would not think that invoice is necessary to go to supply chain management. Again, it's issue of the staff. And we have, as finance, made some efforts of training, alerting people, writing letters to everybody within the spectrum of department to say, if anyone sitting with an invoice within this period, they must submit to them. Most of the invoices that get affected are those invoices that you will find them getting paid towards the end of the financial year. And then they find themselves getting blocked into the system because the system gets locked because it is heavy. But you do have a number of instances of which we zoomed into each and everyone just so for me, where I'm sitting, to understand why is this 30 days period not being met and it's perpetuating. And as the DG and the AG had indicated, if we can get this thing right, we'll definitely move towards the clean audit. We've moved beyond the issue of the non-material understanding in terms of the vote. At least we've done that part. The bigger part is the issue of the 30 days and those reasons. But I think the controls that we put in place for this financial year, and partly in between the year that is under review, 16 and 17, we have managed and survived because there were 2 months that we could not have any invoices that were not paid outside or were paid within the 30 days. The technical question that the member had raised relates to slide 4, wherein the higher education and
institution as well as non-profit organization. I think this is a standard chart of account which is standardized across the department, but I do admit that we could remove that because it don't have any budget implication for us. So it's easy to can take. There's no necessity for us to put those dashes because they don't belong to us anyway within that. The issue of the rollover, it is a fact. It's not an automatic rollover. Yes, in the past, one would say, no, I'm going to get a rollover, but things have become tighter now. We, as DG would indicate, we are very much in a very competing demand, and all departments are competing towards the same pot. So we cannot assume that the rollover is going to be an automatic. However, what we normally do, we ask provinces to share the information in terms of the projects that are committed as multi-year as they could be. However, those projects should have also passed the test of the procurement processes, of the approvals, and of the fact that they have been in the system other than a new project, because if you start a new project, obviously it gets enrolled into the new year. But those kinds of substantial information are very necessary and critical for Treasurer to also see the seriousness and the commitment that the project is still running. It's only that it could not be finalized and paid within the year that is that has closed by 31st March. However, those processes, Chair, and our controls is that as we move towards the end of the financial year, even if it's January, if provinces realize that we do have those projects that will not be able to spend the budget that is budgeted on, they must redirect funds to moving projects, just so that we do not lose funds to back to fiscals. Similarly with the USDG, we've spoken to Metros on that. In the event there are projects or there are areas of services whereby they are not moving at all because of the procurement processes, approvals, or whatever the cases that Metros may have as challenges, that they need to negotiate with us, and then we can redirect the funds to those projects that are moving to avoid the issue of the rollover being recurring. Thank you.
So just to add on the question of the rollovers, the biggest contributor there is Northwest with 200 million rand. They have contractual obligations, not aspirational obligations. They have contracts, they have projects that are running in Tlokwe and Matlosana. They ask us to apply for a rollover, and they have submitted some of those contracts of active projects. Again, it's a risk that could have been avoided. We could have managed all of those things before the end of the financial year. But we've forwarded all of that information to Treasury about contractual commitments. I think, Chair, I have answered the question about monitoring in your question about monitoring and evaluation. But I haven't answered the question about the evaluation, because monitoring and evaluation are two things. We've done more than four evaluations together with the Department of Public, with the Presidency. And I'm sure Dr. Sokopo can talk to those evaluations, because the latter part of your question was about the impact. You only get to know the impact once we've done the evaluations. Monitoring helps you to check if there's value for money in the in-year. Evaluations will help you to change your approach if there is no impact. But I'm going to ask Dr. Sokopo to respond to that question.
Thank you, Chichi. Yes, in partnership with the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, we have undertaken a series of evaluations. One of them was to look at the Urban Settlements Development Grant that is given to municipalities, particularly metros. And one of the things that came out of the evaluation, because previously we were using guidelines, was that you need to be firm about the policy, also the flexibility in terms of the metros, what the grant is supposed to do, because we were trying to move away from just providing a house to ensure that then that is accompanied by the essential services or the infrastructure that is required. So one of the recommendations of the evaluation was that we need to have a policy, which we have done. We have also ensured that DORA has incorporated some of the issues that are around that policy. The other major evaluation that we have done in partnership with the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation was looking at a baseline on informal settlements. As you know, that some of the worrying aspect of our country. So it does tell us about how then can we change the tools that we're currently using in terms of the informal settlements upgrading, and how then should we be assisting the households, instead of also enumerating who are those people that are, and also later on we will come with another evaluation that will look at whether we have improved the quality of household life. As you know that we are, our outcome is to ensure that we are developing sustainable human settlements and improve quality of household life. Another evaluation that we have also looked at was the assets, whether government through its program has developed assets for households, which is talking about now, has the house being used as an asset by households? So, which is some of the issues. That's why then we are putting more emphasis on title deeds, because that evaluation did tell us that you need to put more emphasis on title deeds. You need to put more emphasis on ensuring that you are providing support to the communities. Hence, then also the bill that the DG was talking about from the Estate Agencies Affairs Board is also looking at ensuring that we are also assisting the poor households. We've also have series of other evaluations that are planned, which include your affordable housing. Hence, then there's also more emphasis on us, because affordable housing, it means that the market is failing. The products that are out there, they are not cheap enough for people to be able to afford. Yet they are in the market that do not qualify for what we're calling BNG housing. So there's a lot changes in behavior that we have now adapted. Sometimes it's not necessarily the change in policy, but the change in strategy in terms of those evaluations. And what is beneficial about this evaluation is that it's not only our department, we're doing it in partnership with the other departments, which is now the DPME, even National Treasury, and sometimes even the other government departments that we are inviting and be part of those evaluations. Thank you very much.
My question, Chair, is about the organogram. And the new organogram that we're working on was approved by the Minister. It now has to go to the Minister of Public Service and Administration. That's a standard process. The one that we have that is currently in place was approved more than 4 or 5 years ago. But there's a new structure which talks to these contract positions. That one is still going to DPSA. We can't feel it without doing evaluations, because there are more evaluations that have to be done. Some of the posts that we've advertised them based on the old structure, because you can't advertise on the basis of the new structure until the new structure is approved by DPSA and Treasury. We also need to forward it to Treasury, because Treasury is more concerned about budget implications.
Honourable Member, do you have follow-up questions? See, Honourable Member Gwabaza, I will also make a follow-up. Over to you, Honourable Member Gwabaza.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to know if the 3.4 billion rand cut over the MTF, which programs are likely to be affected by the cuts, and how are you going to mitigate against that? Secondly, is there a national standardized cost per unit of the RDP house, or is it left to the provinces to determine which one of them determines the cost per unit? Because if that was the case, then I think that it would be quite problematic. You might have a problem of problems of either underspending or overspending, and of course that brings into question also your fraud prevention strategy, if you could speak to that as well. You have spoken about your database. It would be interesting to know whether the database you have is also linked to the provinces and municipalities, so that you are able to say to me if 10 years ago I was allocated RDB house and suddenly I pitch up somewhere else and I say I don't have an RDB house, I want one. You are able to say to me, but we gave you a house number so and so in KwaZulu Natal in such and such a street. You know, this issue came up when we, Chairperson, we had the public hearings in Khayelitsha just about a week ago, where members of the community complain that people get houses, they either sell or for some reason move out of those houses, go create a new shack somewhere else, and then come back and demand another house. And that disadvantages those who have not at all received an RDB house. And it's a drain on the department's finances. So your database and your monitoring systems become very critical because you can't keep on building, allocating houses to one and the same person, two, three, five houses, one and the same person. It's got to be prevented. If that has been noticed by communities and they are beginning to talk about it, it becomes even more critical for the department and provinces to arrest that situation. The last question, Chair, I would like to issue. I'd like to point out. You know, you have 32.6 billion rand budget on your infrastructure because largely you are about it of infrastructure. Is it possible for you to give us a breakdown of the companies that are contracted into your infrastructure build program? Youth owned companies, women owned, those, the involvement of people with disability, this question links to what the Chairperson was saying earlier on. What is the impact of your infrastructure build program on radical socio-economic transformation? Because remember, there was a 60% set aside announced some 2-3 years back that all infrastructure, 60% of jobs in the infrastructure program throughout the country has got to be given to the youth. So it is with that background as well that I'm raising this question. But let me write on that same question about your 30% procurement of goods and services allocated to minimum, and I emphasize minimum of 30% to black companies. If you don't have an answer now, it would be appreciated if you could give us that whole breakdown, not just at the national level, in the provinces as well. Yes, because we must break down this cake and ensure that it spreads across, so that it responds to the economic transformation. Thanks.
From me, thank you for the explanation you have given with regard to your monitoring and evaluation. Our observation as a committee is that we can talk monitoring, but if that monitoring is not aligned to the department's plan, it will not assist with the actual implementation and achievement of your targets. Now, is your monitoring, or I'll say monitoring and evaluation unit, normally it becomes one. It's one unit, am I right? Or in your case, they are separate, yeah. Is it aligned to the plan of the department? Or if it is aligned, on a quarterly basis, they will be using that plan to measure performance. Okay. Well, we accept your explanation on the accruals and the negative impact that the accruals have. Actually, the accruals, as you start your new financial year, if the accruals are 50%, it means your budget for the new financial year is now minus 50%. Now, meaning that even that plan that you have, you would have to adjust to that 50% because you can't use money you don't have. And you have correctly put it. It is a budget principle. You can't use money you don't have. So I think you must find a way of emphasizing it to all, even the provinces, on the negative impact of the accruals, and indeed you should show zero tolerance. And I heard the CFO talking about consequence management. I think that should happen. Consequence management has got to be done. People must be, I think if you don't act, people will not learn a lesson and they will not change. So the accruals, as far as we're concerned, it's a no-no, it's a deviation from the PFMA. Yeah? It's a, deviation from a budget principle. And it has got a negative impact. One other issue that we have picked up on infrastructure development is failure by departments to do contract management. Contract management. I would want you to comment on this one because I think it's about time that you take some small, but you know it has a very, it has an important role to play in terms of your delivery and timeous delivery on time. Because as your service delivery encroaches into the next financial year, it has got also cost implications, which means you will then have to find money you have not budgeted for because of the escalation of cost escalation in the following financial year. So it's a costly exercise. So meaning that I think the best would be that you also look at, you emphasize contract management and go to an extent of training, you know, your department, all the departments, you can train at national, you can call and then let them be trained on contract management so that we can see if we cannot bring down this challenge of not delivering on time, houses on time. I would also, DG, want you to maybe to illustrate to us on how close are you, because we are now in the midterm of your MTSF, né? How close are you towards the realization of your MTSF goals?
there are MTSF goals that are linked to your, the NDP. Am I right?
Yes.
So because we're now left with almost 2 years, if you start now in April, May, yeah, we're left with, is it not 1 year, 8 months, or 10 months? 10 months, yeah. We must talk figures now so that we can be sensitized, that we are really moving very fast towards our exit. But you had goals that you had set for yourself for the MTEF period. So how close are you? You know those goals. I have a whole list here that I'm looking at, but if I can go through it, it might take time. Your upgrading of 2,200 informal settlements, you know that list, that whole list. I have it. So if you can't provide us with an adequate response today, we request that you submit a report on this one. We would like to see, because with us, we look at value for money and also the budget as it is linked to your plan. And actually, I'm talking your MTSF plan. There's a budget that is made of it. So we want to check on whether come end of this period, we will have achieved, meaning that we will have made the impact that we would all like to see in terms of the National Development Plan that is supposed to take our nation to greater heights and bring a better life for all. Now, the Honorable Quip Gwabaza touched on a public hearing we had at Khayelitsha. It was on the appropriation bill. Prior to that public hearing, there was a public education on the appropriation bill. When we went there, the hall was full. But in the main, people spoke about housing problems. Hey, big time. And then he sent a message to us to say, I think it also influenced us, to say we must prioritize housing. We've just been to this one province, we have not been to that, but the magnitude of the problem here, ne? And what are you doing to address? Ne? Well, if you have a budget, and you've had this budget from 2014, and people midterm of your MTSF, people are complaining the manner they have done in. Sure, we thought there's something that you're not doing right. Of course, the NDP emphasizes the need for urban reform, including densification to overcome apartheid's special legacy. Okay. Now, some of the concerns raised during that public hearing about the relocation of informal settlement dwellers to the outskirts of cities to formal housing, thus keeping them further away from the economic hub. Now, we thought, why is the Constitution binds all of us to be responsive to the needs of the people? This one did not illustrate that. But also, you can see it's not in compliance with the NDP requisites. Again, proposal for smart use of land for upgrading of informal settlements through the construction of flats. We have found that this one, if you could respond on whether are you able to upgrade the land of informal settlements through the construction of flats. Are you responding? Because these ones, we're talking about their experience there. And then we then thought, this is how you are supposed to respond. Because it's in line with your NDP, the flats. Instead of, okay. Now on proposals for the state to not neglect original and old settlements that have a historical significance, okay. All right, here we picked up a neglect by the state on all settlements that have historical significance. Do you have a program that seeks to redress this problem, this challenge? Do you have a program? Because as I put it to you, see, these narratives are not helping us. Now we want to see what you have done, because also where you respond and say, yes, we've done this, we, as this committee, we're so ready to go there to see. But we should not be us, it should be your monitoring and evaluation unit, and then we just follow or get their report. Okay. Now, in the main, the citizens raised a concern that they are not able, we are not accessible. And then they wanted to know from us, how do they reach out to your department? Okay, I would also want you to comment on the emphasis on prioritizing low-income housing and the recent sale of the Dufferberg property in Cape Town, and how can we ensure that we undo the apartheid legacy. I don't know, I take it that, because you know you said in your response, you said there is alignment of planning between yourself and the province. So this question then is triggered by this one, to say, can you respond on this one? If there was alignment of planning, how did this happen, when it is common knowledge that, or we all know that this Dufferberg property was earmarked for the low-cost housing, but now it's no longer going to happen, which then says the people's problems, the citizens' problems, you know, it's going to, yeah, it's like defer or postpone your redress of this problem, low-income houses problem in Dufferberg. I think that would be the last question for me. Right. Okay, there's another hand. All right, Honorable Shoppes Tole.
Thank you, Chairperson, and apology for coming late, I was not well. I just wanted to emphasize what the Chairperson has said, that it is very dangerous to spend money that you do not have. It only happens in the U.S. because they've got a printing machine. You see, Greece, because their dollar is printed in Brussels, if they spend more money, they go bankrupt. So don't find yourself in the Greek situation.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start with the last question. I think it is you've raised this question yourself, Chair, and I think the Honourable Member raised this question as well, because it's linked to our clause. It's for that reason why we delayed the approval of the business plans of the three provinces. We want to make sure that it doesn't happen again. We know that in the past, HODs would commit between 10 to 15% overcommit by 10 to 15% because they want to find risk mitigators that if one project is not performing, then they can upscale and bring other projects that are ready. And they would use the example of an airline industry that they do overcommit on seats so that they don't have to fly empty to another city. But it is very dangerous when you're managing the fiscus. We watch that, and it is a misconduct because you're committing on a budget that you don't have. Well, maybe 10% is manageable because you can bring it down. 5% is manageable. Or you can upscale in some of the projects that you are already implementing instead of overcommitting. And that's what we encourage HODs to do. The other question, Chair, that you've raised, maybe let me start with that one, the one of Tafelberg. Chair, I am aware that this is one matter that is now being debated in court. But it's safe to say that we oppose that transition as a National Department of Human Settlements. We offered to the province to have an IGR mechanism to help them, because we have the view that instead of committing what one would call asset stripping, because that asset will go and be lost to government forever, we can find means and ways to help the province to raise the funds. I'll give you one practical example. In terms of, I think it's section 5 or chapter 5, but I'll verify it, in terms of the Government Immovable Asset Management Act, which is commonly known as GIAMA, any sphere of government that intends to call it sell or alienate with any government property, you have to give other spheres of government and entities an opportunity to refuse first. It's called the first right of refusal, before you disperse or you sell that asset to a private entity. We are of the view that the Social Housing Regulatory Authority would have purchased that piece of land. And the Social Housing Regulatory Authority is a government entity, and it would have remained in government forever, and we would have given the province an amount of money if they wanted to cover costs elsewhere. Public works, there are land assets that public works would make available to government departments first before they could dispose them to other private citizens. There were feasibilities that were done by the province in 2011, if my memory serves me well, which made it very clear that that piece of land is well located for social housing. You have domestic workers in Sea Point, you have security personnel, we have people who work for Pick and Pay, who qualify for social housing. In social housing, it doesn't matter where it's located, social housing is a well heavily subsidized program. The beneficiaries pay between 800 to 1,500 per month, because we want to make rental affordable. You can't pay 800 rands or 1,500 rands for rent in Sea Point right now, unless you are heavily subsidized. So because it's difficult to buy property in places like Kemps Bay, Sea Point, which are well located from here to Tafelberg, it's about 2 kilometers. It's very close. It's in the CBD, it's well located, it's on the main road. So we felt that the province need to consider that decision. And besides, we were not informed as a national department. We saw this in the media, like everybody else. And what we did, we then wrote to the province and asked for an IGR deadlocking mechanism, and also to be, you know, to be informed as to why the piece of land, which is well located, is a government-owned, it's now being disposed to private citizens. That issue is still in, I'm told it's in court, and the Funukwa is one of the NGOs that is opposing this decision, has taken this matter to court, and we're also opposing it as well. We think that the land has to remain within government. The city of Cape Town was also not given an opportunity to refuse first, because the law says give other spheres of government an opportunity. We have the first right of refusal before you go out and sell it. And I want to confirm it here, Chair, that Sea Point is within the restructuring zone. I think one of the reasons that was put forward as to why the land is being sold is because it was deemed to be outside the restructuring zone. It is within the restructuring zone, and we've always considered it to be within the restructuring zone because it's only 2 kilometers from the CBDs. And if you can build social housing units in Waterseg, which is more than 10 kilometers away from the CBD, there's nothing that prevents you from building social housing units in Sea Point, if you can do it in Waterseg. So that issue, I don't want to spend much time on it because we are, it's probably going to be debated in court. Chair, I would recommend very strongly, because we're not 100% sure about how to customize our presentation for this meeting. We are more than willing. Yesterday we presented to Cabinet our Outcome 8 quarterly report, which tells you all the targets, which ones are red, which ones are amber, which ones are green. Green means good performance. Amber means you are there, but not almost there. Red means you're not doing well. So we've got all of that data, and I think it will take us a full session to present our MTSF targets. I think let's take your recommendation as a, let's take your question as a recommendation. We can forward the information to you next week, and then you can call us some other time to come and present. It's ready. It's available. But please bear in mind that the MTSF targets are informed by the performance of the annual targets. So your APP informs the MTSF. If provinces are not doing well in terms of the APP, nothing is going to change in terms of the MTSF target. So we will be able to break it down for you by province and say which province is doing well in terms of informal settlements upgrading, which is an MTSF target. Which province is doing well in terms of title deeds, which metro is doing well in terms of all of those targets. We've got that data. My only request will be give us another day to present that information to you, but we can forward the presentation to you as early as next week because it's available. The how do we deal with old townships? I'm sure you've seen it a couple of weeks ago. Minister, the MEC for Human Settlements in Gauteng, the mayor of Johannesburg Metro, on TV engaging with communities from Finetown, Enadil, El Dorado Park, Cliptown, Joe Slovo Park, and a number of other areas from the south, dealing with some of these things about how do you deal with backyarders. Because in most old townships, the majority of people who are we have been overlooked over the years at the backyarders. We always prioritize the informal settlements because they are there, everyone can see. But you have backyarders, and some of them, they are in the waiting list and others are not in the in the needs register. So we've taken a decision to perfect the needs register. In fact, the Minister read the Riot Act to us last week, because what Minister wanted us to do is to create a needs register. We do have a system with all the people who are in the waiting list or in the needs register countrywide, but there's a question of accessibility. In some towns, in some municipalities, you have to walk a long distance to register for to be in the needs register. So we're working on that with CSIR, with State SSA, with Home Affairs. In fact, I've asked the IT guys to check some of the systems that are functioning. We asked the program manager to sit down with Home Affairs, because remember, every beneficiary that we put into the database must have a South African citizen. And the department that is entrusted with verifying and validating citizenship is Home Affairs. So we wanted to work with Home Affairs, and we looked at their system, how they've got three systems. There's one that they are using to integrate all the other three systems. So we wanted to sit down with Home Affairs and see if we can't piggyback from that arrangement instead of starting something new or starting something from afresh. The Minister has given us permission to look at all the existing systems. That is intended to fix the database. I need to say, though, that we we believe in the existing housing subsidy system, and we think that there is no way that a beneficiary can have a house twice. What happens? Because every beneficiary that we give a house, we validate that with the ID, and once it's in the system, it's there forever. That is why, in most informal settlements, the people who refuse to be relocated in most cases are people who don't qualify for houses, because if you have received a house in Eastern Cape, you can't get a house in Cape Town. The system is, we think that system is working very well. Every time we issue a new subsidy, we go and verify. Have you received the house? We check. In some cases, people buy houses. Remember, communities sell houses illegally. Some people will sell it for 10,000. You have an auntie who passed away somewhere in Limpopo, in Eastern Cape, and you want to go and attend to a funeral. You sell a house and you come back to an informal settlement. You will not be able to get a house again. And those are people who make it difficult for us to update informal settlements, because they know that they have received houses before, and the system kicks them out most of the time. So we're working on this to perfect that system. In fact, we have a team from the Department of Science and Technology. I am aware, Chair, that your time is very tight, and I want to recommend, with your permission, that because most of the questions that we have raised are questions about performance over the years. How far have we gone in dealing with these things, the NTP densification? We can give you a list of all of the projects that are close to all townships. For instance, we have Flare-Off in Gauteng, which is closer to Soweto. It's a high density development, five-story. We have another project in East London, I think it's built by SOAR, which is a social housing unit. Here in Cape Town, in Milnerton, there's a project there called Dronedans. There's another project in Usenberg. You wouldn't think that these are government projects, because they are high density apartments. When you think of housing, you think of PNG, one single 40 square meter house, which is not the case. And Chair, we can give you a list of all the projects that you may want to visit. In KZN, we have a long list of beautiful, high-density projects in old areas. Lastly, Chair, I'm not going to go through all of your questions, Chair. I think we can respond with some of them in writing. But if we still have more time, we can deal with that. The question about, the only two questions that I want to deal with quickly, the unit cost question. There was a question about the unit cost. Remember, if it's a BNG unit or RT, what you used to call RTP, it's standardized. Everything that we buy there is standardized. It's a 40 square meter house. The size of the lintels above the roof, above your door, is prescribed. There is a model house, what we can do, what we can buy. It's prescribed even the price. It's not just the norms and standards. For instance, service site, as we speak, excluding the geotech variances, you're talking about 47,000 rands per site. Top structure is 110,000 per top structure. Again, that excludes your geotech variances. Geotech variances means you consider all the other sectors. For instance, if you have dolomitic conditions, we have to rehabilitate that piece of land. Or if it's a sandy area, you have to increase. You can increase. The law allows you, the policy allows you to increase the geotech, the variances, up to 15%. So in other words, if you think that the conditions, like in KZN, Southern Cape, are not good, you can move from 47 and increase it by 15%. The same applies on the top structure. In total, the total subsidy quantum is 47 plus 110, which gives you plus minus 160,000 per unit. So it is prescribed, which is why most people were of the view that we should not even be going out on tender and get contractors and companies to compete on the price, because the price is given, it's known. Because if you go out on tender and you ask companies to compete for the price, you're going to get 250,000, 246,000, which we can't afford. Last year we asked the HOD of the Northern Cape not to go ahead with some of the tender bids that he was busy with, because we asked him, why do you go out on tender as if you don't understand, you don't know what is the unit cost of a house, and we have to manage it differently, Chair. So I think the issue about the unit cost is an important one. It's a big question. There are variances throughout the country. I think the only province that has managed that unit cost very well is KZN. I think they have kept the cost minimal as compared to other provinces. We can come back to you with a report on unit cost variations throughout the country, but we've got the norms and standards, we've got the price per unit. The same applies to other units, the social housing units, which is your rental store. The price is prescribed, the norms and standards, we've also standardized the norms and standards. Chair, I think we can come back to you with most of the questions and respond to some of the questions about performance. I don't think we'll do justice to some of the things today. Thank you very much, and thanks for your time.
Sure, you'll agree with me that we had a robust one, and we also received adequate responses. And there are areas where we requested for submissions, like this report. I think we would want the same formula that you used, the same report that you submitted to Cabinet, because we could also use it to measure further performance in the remaining 2 years. And then, of course, the emphasis.
The breakdown on how many on the companies. That information we can provide. How many women contractors that we have, youth contractors, people with disabilities that have been up. We can give you a list of all the contractors that we have, and we can break it down by ownership as well.
Okay.
I think the point about radical economic transformation, that too, we would want to make a full presentation on that, because it's an approach that we're adopting in terms of mega projects and catalytic projects.
Okay. So I think key is your alignment of your monitoring and evaluation with the plans. Okay. Alignment of your MNE with the departmental plans.
Yes, Chair.
Yeah.
That we can provide. We do it on a quarterly basis.
Okay. So that's fine. Otherwise, when I look at the members, they are so satisfied. And time allowing, my colleague for now will submit, but time allowing, we might call you to come and present on that MT medium term strategic framework. Okay, thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned.